Alex Rogan had a dream.
You really are leaving here, aren't you?
To be as far away from here as possible.
You get your chance. When it comes, you gotta grab it with both hands.
It started with a game.
You're gonna bust the record.
But it wasn't just any game.
You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Zur and the Kodan Armada.
And then, one night...
Centauri's the name. We have to talk about a matter of utmost importance. Step into my office. I've seen him come and I've seen him go, but you're the best, my boy. Light years ahead of the competition. Hey.
Alex didn't find his dream.
Hey, look out!
Oh, dear. Hey.
His dream found him. Every Earthling who's ever imagined traveling beyond the stars.
Maybe there is a starfighter left.
I love you, Alex Rogan.
Comes the unforgettable story of one who made it. The last starfighter.
Now, coming to you from the CB Game Exchange Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
Yes, fantastic. The only thing missing from that trailer is a little bit of Grig, and I think you know what I'm talking about. Hello, it's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 in this the month of August in the year of our Lord 2007. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. Bam! We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. This, my friends, my chums, my amigos, mi compadres, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. We're here in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. It is Wednesday, and welcome to day 12. I had someone tell me the other day that actually is pronounced Wednesday, like Wednesday. But that here in America, we've just become lazy and we just contract it down with our speech. We just sort of smash it down into a Wednesday kind of a thing. I don't understand why it's spelled Wednesday to begin with. That seems like one of those things we can probably blame on the Romans. They are to blame for most of those weird pronunciations. Here's the other question I have. And when I say I have a question, I don't really mean that I want an answer to it because I can't imagine anything more tedious. But I do wonder who came up with the whole idea of a silent letter. That can't have been an American invention. I mean, it does seem sort of quintessentially American. We are the nation of things we have and don't really need. When you think about it, the silent letter inside a word really is the most of, it's the most American of all linguistic devices. I mean, you're an American, you got a whole house full of stuff you don't need. You're an American, you have 90% of the things you own, you never use. You never use, certainly not for their intended purpose. So a whole word full of silent letters, that's very American. I'm going to start today. This day, Wednesday, my name is now spelled with a silent letter. I haven't decided which one, nor do I know where it's going to go.
I know where it should go.
At the end? At the beginning?
No.
A Q? Q! What?
I think it should be Rahik. Like you can have a silent H.
Oh, R-H-I-C-K. Rick. Rahik.
It kind of has a whimsical Rick. Air to it.
Okay, I'm going to start that now. Fantastic. Oh, I could do that idiot thing where I just put a dot or an apostrophe or something in the middle of it for no reason. R-I and then apostrophe C-K. Bam. And just to make people do a little double take when they look at the business card. Fantastic. That's what I'm going to do. All right. Excellent. We've already made progress in my life today. Hey, if you want to join us on the telephone, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970 with your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your 2 cents, your what have you. 503-733-2970, Scotty the J, standing by, ready, willing, able, immensely hungover to pass along your phone calls to us so that we might engage in banter. 503-733-2970, your comments on the interesting, the groundbreaking, the tedious, the mundane. If you would like to email us as well, By God, it's possible. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. You can also email everybody else. Tim at 970.am. Scotty G at 970.am. Sarah at 970.am. I'm sorry, did I fail to... I did this. I'm getting emails about this already. I failed to post the link for the Laughing Death Reporter, as he is now known. That TV reporter who's trying to talk about three people killed on the highway, but he just keeps bursting into gales of laughter. We'll get it posted later on. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Here's what's coming up today. I haven't confirmed some of this. We're waiting to hear back from CNN. Because if there's one thing CNN does, they bend over backward to make our life easy. I believe that we're going to be speaking to CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard today. We'll also be talking to Jim Roop. Apparently there's some citizens group in Los Angeles where, like everywhere else, they're under siege from the Chinese. The Chinese, I guess, were just... I mean, pretty soon, every toy you buy for your child is just going to be rigged to explode a shower of nails into your baby's face. It seems like that's the logical endpoint of all this. What is this? Well, it's a doll from China. What does it do? Well, it's filled with carnivorous reptiles. Well, okay. I guess there's some group in Los Angeles, though, that they put out a press release that actually contained the phrase, "It's now every parent for themselves." So, that's wonderful. Society continues to break down, and we are here to chronicle its demise. CNN radio correspondent Mark Shearer will join us today. Talk a little bit about Imus, who somebody must smell money because he just got that $20 million. I mean, you can connect the dots here. You don't even have to have an IQ of room temperature to find. I mean, he gets the $20 million from CBS, and I swear to Christ, 2 hours later, one of those Rutgers players sues him. Well done. That's America, my friends. And also, apparently it's National Elvis. Is it Elvis Birth Week or Elvis Death Week, Tim? Do we know? Do we have any clarification on that?
I haven't been following Elvis news.
Ever? Not ever. Since 1977?
I remember when he died.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't.
I was on the air.
Were you a jock at that time?
Yeah.
What format were you working when Elvis died?
Let's see. It was soft rock.
Well, okay. I could see that audience caring.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of the in-the-ghetto audience. Was it traumatic?
Not for me.
See, me neither.
The funny thing is, nobody had paid any attention to Elvis at that time for, like, at least a dozen years.
Really, he should have died. I was just going to say, he really should have died. You know when he could have died? Right after that Vegas comeback special. Was that 68? Vegas 68?
Yeah, somewhere around.
He should have died right then. I mean, he really should have died earlier. But, I mean, if you were going to pick a place in his career to have capped it, about 9 years hence, or prior, or whatever that word is I'm looking for, when that special where he's in the black leather suit in the boxing ring, he could have died then and people would have been much more upset about it. Anyway, apparently, the only reason I know that he's dead, you know, that I'm reminded of that, is because my wife came home with some of those Elvis Reese's peanut butter cups that they're selling. Have you seen those? Reese's peanut butter cups. Reese's is selling these peanut butter cups that are Elvis flavored. Let me take that back. They're not Elvis flavored. They taste like Percodan. They just taste like Dr. Nick. Little known fact, Dr. Nick on The Simpsons, hello everybody, is named after Dr. What's his Nicolopoulos, that guy who gave Elvis just that suitcase full of drugs. Anyway, these Reese's peanut butter cups they're selling now have the picture of Elvis on the front, and I think it's Fat Elvis, and they taste like chocolate and banana. I think Don and Mike were the other day, were all agog to get some. I think they paid someone like $1,000 to drive and get them some. So, anyway, so we got to Ed McCarthy coming. Apparently he was interviewing some fat, bald-headed nitwits who were in line to do something. I don't even know what you would stand in line for at Graceland anymore. I mean, I firmly, don't get me wrong, I plan to go to Graceland at some point because I recognize its place in the American popular history.
Americans love public mourning.
Well, I guess, but I mean... Didn't that ship kind of sail? I guess it's the 30th anniversary. I guess they kind of come in fives and tens. So it's the 30th anniversary. But I don't think you can see his tombstone or anything, which is mysteriously misspelled. How'd you like that? You're the most famous entertainer in the history of the world. Really arguably bigger than Jesus at one point in your life. And they misspell your name on your tombstone and then never fix it. What is that about? They misspell... And first of all, how do you misspell a two-syllable name? Anyway, speaking of silent letters,
they
misspelled his middle name, Elvis Aaron Presley, and it's with, I believe it's Aaron with two A's, but they spell it with one, or it's Aaron with one A and they spell it with two. How do you misspell the name of the most famous person in the history of all recorded humanity? Maybe it's because he's not really dead. You're too young to remember that. The Is Elvis Alive book that came out in about 1985. That was interesting. If only I'd had a morning show then. Could have milked that for a month and a half. Lisa Goddard, Jim Root, Mark Shearer, Ed McCarthy. We will continue our giveaway of Kissology Volume 2 today. And I'll try to do it. I have this bad habit of doing giveaways like in the last 90 minutes of the show. Always. I never do them up top for some reason. Sometime in the first 2 hours of the show today, we will do our very best to give away a copy of Kissology Volume 2 from VH1 Classics. 7 hours of fantastic vintage Kiss interviews and performances. It really is cool. It's so cool. I'm going to go buy one because I don't even get one for free. So I'm going to go buy one my own self. That's what's coming. Oh, also, you hear this? You know what that sound is? That is the sound of your lunch being ruined. Right here. You don't even know what it is. I alone know. I alone hold the power to render you incapable of eating even the smallest bites of your noontime sustenance. Right here in my hand. The newest contestant for It's the Worst Story You've Ever Heard. Right here. Oh, with pictures, by the way. I'm not going to give you the website right now. I'm not even going to hint as to what it is. I'm just going to say that there are 5 pictures accompanying this 2-page story, which is so horrifying, I may have difficulty reading it all the way through. I may actually have to stop and just sort of spell myself. I may have to go to the corner, and Burgess Meredith may have to douse me with some sort of fortifying water before I can finish this story. We're going to put that right there. Excellent. All right, what else? Well, that's it. Oh, and the top 5 coming up today, and a big pile of news that I have yet to sort. I'm running a little behind today. I'm not going to let it get to me, though. I'm a pro. I'm going to play through the pain. But I got this big pile of news that I haven't really sorted, so we may just spin the wheel of news and get to that later on. Oh, and we'll quiz Scotty on the drugs his teenage children may be taking. That's right here. It's 503-733-2970. Like father, like son. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello, and how are you?
Good. Aaron just sent me a weird email. He said he knows it's Elvis Death Week because Elvis died the very year, month, day, and hour, the moment that Jen was born.
Is that true?
Is
Jen an Elvis fan? I can't remember. I can't remember whether she's an Elvis fan or not. I know she's a Chris Isaac freak.
I know she's a Richard Cheese fan.
You don't even know. You weren't there for the birthday shout-out, were you?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, that's right, because that's when the unpleasantness started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll talk about that here in just a second. We should say this, by the way.
God, could it have been hotter in there?
It
that's
is
why
Dante's
I had
Inferno.
To leave. I could not.
That
I couldn't handle
air
it anymore.
Air conditioning on at that place, too. Oh, last
and the
night,
lady in the muumuu kept yelling at us to move out of the way of the fan, and it's like, would you really think that's going to do anything?
See, I don't even remember. I don't even remember the lady in the muumuu.
Yeah, she was in the corner.
Really? I don't even.
No, because we were talking to Richard downstairs. I'm like, oh yeah, this lady in the muumuu is yelling. He's like, that's my mother.
Oh yeah, that's right. I do remember
that.
Yeah,
but it really wasn't.
Thanks to everybody who came to see Richard Cheese and Lounge Against the Machine last night. A sold out. A huge crowd. I mean, and really into it. I mean, he's the coolest guy. And, we got up and we did our little, song and dance on stage. I danced like a minky for the amusement of everybody and, whatever. But, goddamn, it was hot. And it was hot downstairs at Dante's. I've been in the dressing room downstairs at Dante's a couple times. And it's like 20 degrees cooler down there, but it's still hot. And then you walk up on this, it's like walking into hell. It is like walking into the seventh circle. It is unbelievably hot in there when that place is packed. Summertime. And again, with the air conditioning.
They have air conditioning?
The air conditioning was on full blast last night. And it was still, no joke, above 90 degrees. I mean, and the humid, freaking, it was great, but I mean, it's just terrible at the same time.
There's a continuation with that story with the unpleasantness, when I was leaving.
Oh, there's an there's a continuation for us, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, let's.
I didn't ruin your night, did I?
We'll get back to that.
Oh.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Those 2 illegal aliens charged with killing that visiting Texas girl in the Milwaukee apartment are now charged with attempted rape as well. The McMinnville spanking case verdict may come today. A man holding a toy gun told Springfield police, "Just shoot me." They were happy to oblige. Portland businesses may have to log the names of customers who buy spray paint. Now it's 19 million Chinese toys being recalled, but there's still a place you can get them if you really need one. And the Osmonds reunite to celebrate 50 years in showbiz.
Is that true?
Yep.
Goddamn right. I'm sorry, that's probably the wrong word to use when talking about the Osmonds. So there really was an accident. Fantastic. All right. So we'll get these calls here in a second. People have, let's see, we got an Elvis call, silent letters, so forth. We'll talk to Scotty J here in just a moment. So Richard Cheese last night, first of all, we should give props to that guy. Great show. That guy knows how to work a crowd.
He played through the pain.
Sarah and Raul, you guys took off for a while because it was just so freaking hot.
Yeah, we saw a big chunk of it, though. We were there for about an hour, I think.
Yeah, I'll jump right to the end, and then we'll work our way back. He played for a long time, played till like probably 12:15, 12:30. And I have to say, I mean, not to tell tales out of school, but I mean, that guy, you know, he talked about injuring his leg. He really was in a bad way. I saw him beforehand. And, I mean, he was having a great deal of difficulty walking. And it was, you know, I don't know if I should say the real reason. I found out the real way he injured his leg. And it's kind of, it's nothing, I mean, it's nothing embarrassing.
It's kind of hilarious.
It's just sort of silly, you know. But it was.
I could see how it would happen, though.
Yeah. Anyway, but I think it was, in fact, a bowling accident. That's what he told me. He's like, it's bowling. And he was all ashamed. Because, you know, you want to say that he was, like, fighting off a dragon, but it was a bowling accident. He did use the line, though, that the listener came up with. He's like, hey, I injured myself curb-stomping Steven Seagal to gain his power. Crowd loved it. They just ate that up. He played for probably 2 hours, 2.5 hours. My wife, who had never seen him before, was just agog at how sleazy and great he was. So there was that. He did give us a great big shout-out at the end, the very last song he played. He did his full set. He did Down with the Sickness and, you know, all the big hits. And, I mean, he really knows how to build that crowd to, like, just the climax. And then he did the encore, came off stage, and then came back on stage again. And it was really nice. I wish I had a recording of this, but he gave us a really nice big shout-out. He mentioned Marconi, too, because they've been supporters of his.
Mm-hmm.
But he gave us just a huge wet kiss, as they say. And then they did this. It sounds cheesy when I say it, so to speak. And it was kind of corny, but at the same time, it was sweet. They did this really down-tempo, real mellow, just him and the keyboard version of the WKRP in Cincinnati theme. And then the guy with the brushes on the drums just sort of played him off stage. It was really great. It was a cool ending. So there's that. Oh, and he gave our friend Jen a birthday shout-out, which is fantastic. Okay, here's the unpleasantness from last night, though. The subtitle
of this... I was just trying to do what was right.
That's okay. It's okay. I understand. I'm just saying the subtitle of the story is how Sarah Dillon nearly got me beaten by someone. So here we are upstairs at Dante's last night. We're upstairs, and there's, you know, you've seen it. There's a balcony that kind of looks down onto the stage. And that's not, people think that's like a VIP area, and it's really not. I mean, I think anybody can sit up there. I think it's a few bucks extra for most people.
It's $100.
Is it $100?
Yeah, I was talking to Frank last night.
Oh. Well, hello.
Yeah.
Look at us. I didn't know. Anyway, well, but there was some... That's so great that makes the story that I'm about to tell even better.
Mm-hmm.
So there we are up in the balcony. I didn't know it was $100.
I hope yours ends with what I did before I left.
Well, mine ends with not paying for any of the drinks, so that's fine with me. I thought that was... Was that on your tab?
No, that was on your tab, I thought.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Moving on. So we're upstairs in the balcony, and this makes the story even better. I didn't know you had to pay $100 to get up there.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay, never mind. I guess for the rest of the day, I can't bitch about how we never get anything. So we're upstairs in the balcony looking down on the stage, and there's three people at a table in front of us, and they're doing whatever, and they're, you know, they're hooting and hollering and so forth. Aaron's wife, Jen, her birthday is actually tomorrow. She is a huge Richard Cheese fan. And we've told the story, so I won't retell it again. But blah, 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 blah. That's how we first, you know, I first met her. She came to one of our listener parties for Richard Cheese. She's a huge fan. It's her birthday, and I call her Cheese, and I'm like, hey, one of the girls in our party, it's her birthday. She's a huge fan. Can you give her a shout-out? You don't have to do anything special. Can you just say happy birthday, Jen? You know, she'd love it. So Richard Cheese is like, hey, we have a very special, birthday girl in the house. Jen, are you here? And, of course, from the stage, you can't really see the balcony all that well. And so I'm like, okay, Jen, I got to put you up front. So I grab Jen, real roughly, and I'm like, come on! And I shove her towards the front of the balcony. And we're all kind of waving so Cheese knows where she is. There are these three people sort of blocking the way, though, at the table. And so you tell me if I'm telling the story correctly. Sarah Lee.
Oh, Brad paid our tab.
Oh, thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Brad.
God bless you.
Oh.
So there are three people in front of us sort of blocking the way. And so Sarah leans down to one of these guys sitting in
very
a chair.
Very politely.
Very politely. I witnessed it. Sarah leans down very politely and Sarah says, hey, this is, you know, our girlfriend Jen here. It's her birthday and Cheese is doing a thing. Can she sit in your chair for just a second? And what did the guy say? Did he just say no?
He's just like, I don't think so. And then he turned his back on me and, like, kept watching. I'm like, she can't. I'm like, can she squeeze in here? He's like, no. And started looking at me, and I got really pissed off.
Oh, so you didn't even ask him to give up a seat. He just
no,
said,
I just asked if she could stand behind him.
Ah,
like,
okay.
Just squeeze in.
That makes it
like,
even better.
No, because I told him, I'm like, the girl that he's talking about right now is this girl right here. I'm like, can she get a little closer so
they
can see her?
I mean, it's very cool. He's, like, giving this little birthday prop to her friend. And so Sarah, yes, very politely, is like, hey, can our friend squeeze in here? Cheese is doing a thing for her. Okay. So the guy said, I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
So we're standing there, and I am sort of oblivious to how that turned out. So I'm standing there watching Cheese give the birthday greeting. And then Sarah just comes in. Sarah's like, F that guy. What a dick. And I'm like, what? And he's like, he wouldn't let Jen in so she could get her birthday greeting from Cheese. And I'm like, that guy? And he's just some little emo-looking bastard.
Yeah, some little douche in
some
a blue
tool,
shirt.
Some tool. And so I'm like, that guy there? And Sarah's like, yeah, F him. And I'm like, ah, what a jerk. And then so...
I started looking around.
Half a second later, Sarah's eyes start darting around like they're rabid cockroaches. And I'm like, what are you doing? And Sarah says, I'm looking for something to throw at him. And I said, what? And she goes, I'm going to throw something at him. Do you have anything to throw? And so what do? Like an idiot, without even pausing, Sarah says, do you have anything to throw at this guy? And I go... I got some quarters. What would a responsible person have said? No, Sarah, Sarah, violence never solves anything.
But come on, how dead on was my aim?
Oh, so I give Sarah a quarter. And the next thing I know, Sarah, like Sandy Koufax, is just wound up. Zzz, bam, right into the side of the guy's
nails
head.
Nails him with the edge of it.
Right into the side of the guy's face. And then, of course, the guy turns around, and Sarah is already, like, in casual talking to her boyfriend mode. So, anyway, what about that washing machine at home? Totally. And the man and the guy starts looking right at me because he thinks I did it. And so I'm doing the thing of not looking at him but not looking away, just sort of casually taking in the scene. And then you guys leave a little while later. Do you remember throwing something else at him and then flipping,
oh, yeah,
with giving him the double fingers?
Yeah, I remember that because he threw a straw at me when I was leaving.
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
part.
It bounced off my shoulder. I'm like, are you kidding me? I started running up the stairs, and Raul was like, let's go.
Yeah, so...
Because Raul didn't know that he had thrown something at me, but I told him outside, and I had to stop him from coming back into beating that guy.
Oh, he totally should have. I would have helped.
Yeah, because I was like, hey, you. And yeah, I remember
yeah, so
yelling him.
All I know is that Sarah and I, Lara and I at one point look over, and Sarah's going down the stairs, and you're screaming at the guy and giving him the big double fingers from the stairs. And Lars like, what's that about? I'm like, I'll tell you later, baby. Don't you worry about it. So the rest of the night, though, every chance, and it's just me, Lara, Aaron, and Jen. Rest of the night, the guys just turn it and just give me the stink eye. Just every moment.
Did Frank ever come up there?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I mean, well, he came up at one point. He came up and poked his head around.
Yeah, because I asked him to throw that guy out.
I was
livid. It was her birthday.
I mean,
it was her special day, and that guy was being really rude.
He was kind of a jerk. And Frank came up and poked his head around. He didn't kick anybody out.
Okay.
But the guy just kept giving me the stink eye for the rest of the night. And, you know, and at one point he just, like, was giving me the full-on unbroken glare. And I kind of looked over at him, and look, it's not like I'm going to start some crap. I'm a big spindly guy. What am I going to do? Not like I can fight anybody. But he gives me the long, unbroken stare, and I look at him, and I give him the whole, like, I kind of arch my eyebrows and give him the whole, yes? It's just sort of not a challenge, but sort of like a, can I help you? And then he just kind of, like, looks away, and then he didn't say anything else. So that was it. Oh, by the way, we want to give a shout-out to our friend Rob, who was up there. We met a listener. There was a guy sitting right in front of us. The end of it, and I apologize. I cannot remember his wife's name. I apologize for that. But Rob, who was up there, is a big fan of the show, and so we saw him at Cheese. So there you go. So that was Sarah's attempt to start a brawl upstairs at Dante's last night. It really was satisfying.
Well, and then Rob's no better, because as soon as I told... Because he didn't know that the guy had thrown a straw.
So when you
me.
Told him, he wanted to come back in.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the guy?
I had to physically. Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know. He's just as hot-headed as I am, which make for.
I think he could totally have taken that.
No,
guy.
He has crazy behind that little frame. Like he's.
Yeah, he looks unstable.
I feel like he could kill anybody.
That's wonderful. All right. We have no time to. Hey, Scotty, can you? Scotty, do we have these CNN people as they're booked? Are the CNN people going to be happening as we schedule them? Okay, so we should break now then, because we've got Lisa Goddard, I think, at 11:30. Damn, maybe these phone calls too. Elvis. It's all Elvis today. It's Elvis, somebody about Raul, and then John, who says that we are prima donnas. Well, that's I got to take that one now.
For prima donna.
No, I got to take that one now. Except it's spelled P-R-E.
Yeah, could you people be more
foolier? Hold on. I got to finish this.
Could you be more
foolier? No, I got to finish this, and then we'll take your call.
Rick, it's spelled, being too full of yourself.
It's spelled P-R... I'm sorry. Forgive me for putting you on hold so I can finish your thought.
Don't talk about yourself, Rick Emerson, the Rick Emerson Show.
It's spelled P-R-E, and then Madonna, you know, like Madonna the artist. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, could you people be any more full of yourself?
If I worked at it. Wait, hold on. How about this? How about I will demand that at all times a small group of people walk in front of me throwing down rose petals? Oh, you didn't even stay to hear the joke.
I bet that was Blue Shirt.
Seriously? Was that that guy?
I don't understand how we're full of ourselves.
I didn't throw anything at the guy. Can I just say this? The only prima donna moment is you trying to get him thrown out. That's it.
That was a prima donna moment.
It didn't work,
I'm
though.
I'm sorry.
He didn't get kicked out. That's how it all comes around, is you tried. At the end, you tried to flex the muscle to get him kicked out, and it actually didn't even work. So, well, whatever. F that guy. Seriously. Can my friend squeeze in here? I don't think so. Whatever. Whatever, pal.
And I already chucked him in the head with the quarter and gave him double fingers.
Seriously, that was great. Hey, look.
Get him out.
I just happened to be standing there. Oh, and I gave Sarah the quarter. Oh, and I said, F that guy.
I can't believe how good the aim was.
It really was impressive.
I didn't
impressive.
Really expect it. And then all of a sudden, it's like it hits a little too perfectly, and I thought maybe I hurt him. I'm like, oh, I should have thought about this.
He put out his eye. All right. Fantastic. I guess we should break here because we got Lisa Goddard. If you were on hold... See, now people like want to talk about last douchebag caller. Okay.
Let's not give him any more attention.
Do me a favor. If you're on hold, all of y'all, silent letters, douchebag, Elvis, Raul, hang on. We'll get to you. We got Lisa Goddard coming in a few. We will get to your calls. So don't take those for granted. We will be back after this. Stay there. We'll get underway after this. Don't go in. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent extraordinaire, the one and the only Lisa Goddard. Why, hello there.
Hey there. How are you?
I am dandy. How you doing, sister?
I am doing A-okay.
A-okay. Really?
A-okay. And I made both symbols right there. I made the A with the two hands and then the okay with the one hand.
Let me ask you this. When you write A-okay, do you ever spell it all the way out?
You know, I did. There was a whole period in high school when I was really into spelling it out.
What does the AP style book say about that?
I think okay is just okay. Let me see. Where is my style book?
Do you guys use the AP style book, or do you have like your own nerd like CNN style book?
I've got there's both, but usually AP in my world AP trumps CNN on style.
I don't know why. Be sure to say that. Be sure to say that everywhere you go at CNN. The AP completely trumps CNN.
I'm an AP snob. They know it. They're very clear on that. But, you know, of course, when I'm writing, I do write according to CNN style, and I speak using CNN style. But if it's a toss-up, I'm going to go with the AP.
Don't get me started on the AP style book because it's filled with gibberish.
It's hilarious. And, you know, and the folks I used to work with at the AP had freakish knowledge of that they really loved bringing up. You know, like some word that really only applied to a specific set of shipping lanes and you think it applies to everything, but no, it's really only in the southern hemisphere. And
I'm going to ask you one brief question about the AP style book, and then I have this. Then I have another question for you, which I will, I guess, ask first.
Great. Bam, bam.
Just to give you a little window into the way the Rick Emerson Show works. How do you feel about hanging out with us here and staying on the line while I answer a couple of calls?
Fantastic.
We'll get that here in a second. But before, let me ask you this. Where does the AP style book stand on the so-called Oxford or serial comma? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. The serial or Oxford comma is when you are listing things. Let's say you are listing three things.
I know the answer to this question.
Such
as,
I'm going to take calls from Steve, Dave, and Jesse. Do you put a comma after Steve and then another one after Dave, or do you only put a comma after Steve?
Under AP style, and works as a comma. You don't need a comma as well as the word
that's
and.
Wrong. That's just flat out wrong.
No, that's correct. It's superfluous to have a comma as well as the word and. It's unnecessary.
In no way. Okay, this is why I can't talk about the Oxford comma, because it just fills me with white-hot supernova rage.
Really?
Oh.
I can't believe that. But you're pro-comma. You're pro. You want it everywhere. You would put it in your sandwiches, it sounds like.
Not enough sandwiches or commas in this world. All right, let's take a couple of calls, and then we'll talk about Iran Just so I can make a joke about Iran so far away.
Oh, boy.
Let's see here. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson program. Hello, sir. You're on with Lisa Goddard.
Well, if you put a comma, if you don't put a comma after Dave, then it's like Steve, and then Dave and Jesse as one entity.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Let's say you say this, Lisa. Let's say you're going on a picnic. Mm-hmm. On my picnic, I brought potato salad, hot dogs, and plutonium. If you don't put a comma after hot dogs, the implication is the hot dogs and plutonium are mixed. They are one item.
That's the whole idea behind the semicolon. If you're going to do a crazy list like that where you want peanut butter and jelly and ham and cheese, then you've got to employ some serious punctuation. You can't just leave that to the little comma. It wasn't meant for that.
That's okay, but you're using a semicolon then in places where it's not supposed to be, because a semicolon is supposed to take the place of the word but or and.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think that you've got two ways of handling that. You can comma off like groups such as peanut butter and jelly and ham and cheese.
I don't even know where we are. I need a diagram.
Yeah, but I understand the confusion, but I don't think when is that ever really a problem?
I have had such screaming arguments with people about this in my life. My brother married a journalist. But the worst part was she was still in college, and so of course the people who are currently in college are just the most obnoxious people on earth, and so she and I just got the three of us, me, my brother, and his then fiance were driving along the highway, and he actually had to pull the car over at one point. I swear to Christ, because there was such a heated argument in the car about the use of this comma, and we actually had to pull over to the shoulder of the road because the argument was so fierce I thought we might have an accident.
Oh wow!
Totally.
Yeah, I'm so distressed that I don't actually have my AP style book here, because I usually do, right. But it must be at home.
Steve, what have ye to say about silent letters?
Okay, I have a spelling for your last name.
Okay.
Capital E, M, Schwa, R, S-A-U-G-H-N.
Okay. We were talking about adding silent letters to my name.
Oh, that's great.
Difficult.
I like that. I like the Schwa.
I was just going to say the Schwa. You had me at Schwa, sir.
I had you. But, like, Vaughn... V-O-U-G-H-N?
Yeah.
Emerson, S-A-U-G-H-N. There you go.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. God bless you, sir. That is a great suggestion.
All right, I'll see you later, buddy.
Thank you, sir. There you go. All right, let's get to two more, and then we'll talk Iran. Well, we got multiple Jessies here. Well, let's get Jesse. This one here says, comments about last douchebag caller, presumably not the silent letter guy. Hi, Jesse.
What's up, guys?
Hey.
Hey, Sarah.
Hello.
I just want to tell you that I will fight any emo that... just does not go with the Emerson way. I'm not a big guy. I'm about 5'9", but bring them on, emos.
It really was the floppy.
As long as they don't have a skateboard.
I was going to say, it was the floppy skater hair that really had it.
As long as they don't have a skateboard, I'm good.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Love you.
All right, there you go. And the final call here, this is the other Jesse. Hello, Jesse. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick. How you doing?
What's up?
We should start an army of Jessies. You got so many
Jesse really
calls.
Every guy who calls this show now is either Jesse, Dave, or Steve.
I like how the last Jesse was a real big and tough wanting to fight emo kids.
Sure, he's really throwing down the physical gauntlet there, yeah.
Hey, so it's a good thing that it didn't escalate with Sarah or Raul coming in. I don't know if you've seen Dante's security in action. Even if a scuffle starts, they just grab everybody by the neck and drag them outside.
No, they're big guys there. I should say we did have a cool little... This will just feed the guy who says we were prima donnas, by the way. That we had a cool little Goodfellas moment, though, because Sarah and I did the stage introduction. Thank you, Jesse. I appreciate it. That's Jesse. Sarah and I had a little moment where, because we introduced Richard Cheese on stage last night, but the place was so packed, I mean, it was sold out. It was probably oversold, and it was impossible to cut through the crowd. We didn't want to walk in front of the stage to get back to our seats because I didn't want to look like it's his show. I don't want to walk in front of the stage and be whatever. So we're like, well, I guess we'll have to fight our way through the back of the crowd at the back of the venue. And our good friend Kristen was there. She collared one of the sort of bouncer guys, and she's like, hey, can you take these guys in the back way? And so I swear to God, he did the thing where he took us out on the sidewalk. We came around the back through, like, some secret door on the outside, and then he took us through the kitchen.
A lot smaller than you'd think. It was really tiny.
And, like, 180 degrees through the kitchen and then right to our, our table. It was, like, my one and only Henry Hill moment. It was very cool. All right. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Have you just been snoozing through this whole thing?
No, I've been wondering, if you were to say
oh, no.
Jesse, Steve, or Dave, would you put a comma before or?
Jesse,
that'd be ridiculous.
No, because the or automatically separates them. There is no danger
of
confusing
Jesse?
Them.
What if it's Jesse, comma, Dave, or Steve?
I'm sorry. So wait,
I feel like it's the same.
I gotta get a pen. Hold on. I gotta write it down. What if it's what?
What if you're saying that Jesse's definitely coming, but the issue is, would say Jesse and Dave or Steve? Is that the argument here? Because I feel like or and it's the same principle.
No.
It's not a comma.
No. Listen, if you said I am bringing peanut butter and jelly.
Yes.
In fact, let's actually take it one step further. Let's say I am bringing macaroni and cheese. Obviously, you assume...
You guys are still going on about this.
I'm just saying, macaroni and cheese, you assume that it's probably a combination of the two, but you don't know for sure. If you say I'm bringing macaroni or cheese, they are definitely two separate items. That's why you need the comma with and, because it is vague about whether they are two separate items or one item made of two entities.
I don't know. I think it's a waste of space when you've got an and.
The commas are never wasted space, Lisa Goddard.
Waste of space. Why, I'm glad to see you embracing punctuation.
You know,
like
this is the same style book that says advisor is spelled with an E. All right? So I would just say that, consider the source of this so-called grammar information you're getting. All right. Have you read the book Eat, Shoots, and Leaves?
No.
You got to do it. Eat, Shoots, and Leaves. I read it last year, I think. I had a bunch of people recommend it to me. It's called A Zero Tolerance Approach to Punctuation, I believe is the subtitle. It's really hilarious. It's written by a British woman, and it's sort of funny and snarky the way only British women can be. I heard Imus, of all people, raving about it years ago, and I finally read it last year, but she's one of our people on this. The author's photo in the back, where it's like it shows a picture of the author. The author's photo in the back is, I swear to God, it is a picture of her with a can of spray paint, spray painting over an incorrect apostrophe that's been put on a sign, where like a guy was like, we sell mattresses, and he'd put like an apostrophe before the S because he was a moron, and she's like spray painting it out. So it's called Eats, Shoots, and Leaves.
Excellent.
It's a great book.
Okay.
All right. I don't even know what we're talking about today. I guess it's Iran. I don't understand. I am of two minds on Iran. I guess there's so-called intense discussions going on about whether Iran's, whether they have this faction, that is, whether they're global terrorists or whether they're good or bad or whatever. But, I mean, unless something has changed, not that I'm all in favor of going in and nuking Iran or invading them or something, but this is the same country that, stormed our embassy and kidnapped a bunch of people for like a year and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to believe that they're suddenly our pals.
Right, and likewise, they don't have that belief about us either, and hence there is great tension, and it seems to be that Iran believes it's in their national interest to oppose our national interest. So that's where you get the conflict, and what the United States is saying, what this U.S. government is saying, is that Iran has done that and is promoting not just its thoughts and opposition to the U.S., but also its general agenda across the Middle East through a number of venues, and in fact supporting Hamas in Gaza, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and also the Taliban in Afghanistan, also running weapons into Iraq. I think what you're not going to hear in this debate is Iran is trying to set itself up to be a world power in the Middle East. And that might seem obvious, but what's happening here is this is a preemptive rhetorical strike against a potential new power in the Middle East. Now, Iran, on the other hand, has very serious economic issues that mean it can't be the same kind of threat like, say, Germany in World War II. But the U.S. is looking at this early, seeing a danger down the road that is developing quickly and to the U.S. and saying, all right, where's the problem? They're saying today, now the State Department, according to the Associated Press, saying that they are now ready to say that at least some part of the Iranian Republican Guard is involved in terrorism and is a terrorist group. The question is, are they going to say the entire Revolutionary Guard is a terrorist organization, or are they going to focus it on this elite cadre called the Quds Force? And that's still in dispute because, obviously, this makes Europe very nervous, many other American allies nervous, that this just ratchets up tension between the U.S. and Iran. Now, and this also brings up the issue of Russia, which has been warm toward Iran, much more cool to the U.S., And it really is a very serious and real game of risk that's happening involving countries in close proximity, the U.S. and Iran.
It's weird because, you know, we were talking about the movie War Games yesterday. It's really,
right.
It's weird because right now, not to be melodramatic about it, but it does feel like there are days when we are in danger of slipping down some slope and landing back in 1984, not the Orwell book, but landing back in the actual, you know, landing back in the 80s where there, as you said, there really was this big game of risk with the Soviets on one, the Russians on one side,
right,
and us on the other, and countries like Iran. It really is like everything old is sort of new again. Is this thing with Iran just, is this a relatively recent development, or is this a gradual and inevitable escalation of where they have always been going over the last 20 years?
I think I think what's happened is that the U.S. invasion of Iraq shifted things very dramatically in the Middle East. Iran was balanced out by Iraq, those two states being adversaries for so long with Saddam Hussein in Iraq that really the Iran could focus its attention and focus whatever strategy, whatever concern it had. It had to deal with Iraq. It had to deal with that border with Iraq and with Saddam Hussein. Didn't really have as much energy to spend on the Western world as it does now because Iraq is more closely allied to Iran. Both are now Shia-led governments as opposed to the Sunni government that was leading Iraq under Saddam Hussein. So it really frees up Iran in a lot of ways, especially militarily, to consider other options and other power plays around the world.
Hey, just as a brief side note, are we still the great Satan in Iran? Is that still a phrase they use, or is that like a Pat Riley trademarking three-peat? Did that go away with Khomeini?
You know, I should find out. I don't know the answer to that. Not being in Tehran, I don't know.
All right.
But I am sure it is uttered somewhere.
By the way, you might like to know that now there's some wiseacre listeners who are sending me emails which contain a comma after every single word. So thanks for that was like a full-on Nelson Muntz you just did there.
It was going exactly.
Excellent. All right. It is always a pleasure. We will have speech with you very soon. Enjoy the rest of your
excellent
day, sister.
Excellent. You guys too.
There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. There you go. I didn't want to read this email because it might have made her feel awkward. But let's see. We've got this. Rick, not to be gross, says this email, but this whole conversation about commas, but this whole conversation that not only involves Lisa Goddard, but the Oxford comma is giving me a, brace yourselves, nerdgasm. And that's what I'm saying. That's why I didn't read it with her on the phone. And this is after I didn't think it could get any better when Lisa busted out Bible knowledge the other day. And then he says, and for the record, everyone needs more Oxford comma. Ultimate clarification for the win. Thank you, sir. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We'll get Mark Shearer in just one moment. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, Matt.
Yeah.
Hey.
Just use with in those lists.
How do you mean? Give me an example, sir.
Oh, ham with cheese.
Peanut okay.
Butter with jelly.
Well, I suppose. I mean, I still think that there's still room for possible misunderstanding there. I do agree that or works very well to separate two disparate concepts or words. I think that when in doubt, the comma is... There's just not enough comma usage in this world to begin with, and the comma usage that is in play is just frequently incorrect. It's like the comma and its cousin mark, the apostrophe. There's probably nothing in this world that is more misused than the apostrophe. I mean, to the extent that I just don't even... I don't even complain about it anymore. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
No? Listen to that. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Fantastic. All right. Hi, Sarah. How you doing over there? Bam.
Oh, you lost me at that last terrible thing you said.
Yeah. Well, that was... I was just reading an email, passing
uh-huh.
it along. I did have the decorum to wait until Lisa was not on the phone to read that. Let's see. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the... Oh, wait. Did we get temp music?
No.
Was it the CBS? Was it the CBS breaking news sounder?
Yeah.
All right, ladies. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City, CNN Radio correspondent Mark Shearer. Hello, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I could press the button. Hi. That would be all right. Hi. How are you, sir?
Good. I'm growing to like that music.
Well, excellent. It's we'll mark it. We'll mark it, Mark. I don't know where I was going with that. All right. How are things in the city that never sleeps, my friend?
Hot and humid and muggy.
What is the, I hate to be this guy, but what is it hot where you are? What is the temperature there?
Well, it's only about 83, actually. So how can I complain?
Well, I mean, the bigger problem there is like everything's just made out of concrete and hate, right? There's just no greenery. If you're not in, literally, if you're not underwater or in Central Park, you're just in the vast concrete jungle there. So that probably exacerbates the situation, I would imagine.
Concrete and hate.
Yes, you can write that down. You can use that phrase yourself. Hey, so I suppose these things are completely and wholly unrelated. So Imus gets this $20 million payout from CBS, and literally like 4 seconds later, one of these Rutgers people sued him, right?
I can't believe the timing on that.
Yes, it's hard to believe.
But, you know, lawyers being lawyers, the guy's got an interesting, well, the guy representing the basketball player, I think has an interesting argument to make. I don't know about you, but I think it's illuminating that this lawsuit claims that the remarks that Don Imus made that got him into all this trouble and got him knocked off the air came during the news or the sports segment. So there's a sports segment. So there's different rules that apply to how much an outrageous DJ can say.
Yes.
What do you think? I mean, did you break it down that way on your show?
Well, I mean, I guess Imus was talking, was during a news segment. I know that. I mean, again, I know that both officially and unofficially, there's sort of different parameters depending on what you're doing. Just, you know, it's just like something you can show during the news, you probably can't show during the 7 a.m. children's cartoon hour. So is this guy representing one player, the whole team, a bunch of players?
That's another interesting angle. You know, the whole team met with Imus and then later voted to accept his apology.
Right.
But now a junior member of the team, the center, is the one that's filing this slander and defamation of character suit.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, I mean, is this directly tied to the fact that he just got this big chunk of cash from CBS? Is anybody, I mean, was this suit in the works before that, or were they just sort of holding this in their back pocket until he got the cash?
Oh, I'm sure that suits like this are not, you know, not done on the spur of the moment. And I suspect they were ready to go. Perhaps they were even waiting for news of the settlement of the suit. You know?
All right. Hey, has WABC said yay or nay on whether they've been talking to Imus about that gig?
They're not saying anything, and in fact, we're hearing different stories now that he may go elsewhere. But of all the New York stations that are being mentioned now that he might pop up on, all of them seem to have fairly entrenched and somewhat successful morning shows. So somebody's going to be a little offended by being asked to step aside for Don Imus.
Well, let him know if he wants to do something with, you know, very, very low pay and negligible upside. You just have him come my way, sir.
I hear you.
Excellent. Thank you. CNN radio correspondent Mark Shearer in New York. Excellent. Trying to do a little sweet leaf there. It's 503-733-2970. Final grammar call ever. And then we'll break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
You know, Schoolhouse Rock can teach you all to know about grammar and proper usage of it. And, but, or, conjunction, junction.
What's
that's where it's at, brother.
Hooking up words and thoughts and things. Isn't that
yeah.
it? Or clauses? What is he hooking? What is it, the conjunction? What are they hooking up?
Hooking up words and phrases and clauses.
Words and phrases and clauses. All I can...
So you could have ham and cheese, comma, or butter and jelly.
Now I don't even know what we're talking. Now you've lost me again.
No, I mean, ham and cheese is one thing, comma, or peanut butter and jelly, because the words connect themselves.
Right. No, I understand that. I guess what I'm saying is the language has to be constructed in such a way that perhaps the ham and cheese are two separate things, or is the ham and cheese a blend? And
that's one thing, because the conjunction puts it together.
Right. Well, because the and is there. That's what I'm saying. So if, let's say, for example, you had a cousin who was lactose intolerant, and you were not bringing ham and cheese, but you were bringing ham and cheese, you would have to put a comma after ham.
Yeah, or I could say, I'm bringing ham and cheese. Crap.
Yeah, see? See, it all falls apart. You've got to have the comma there. It all implodes.
Well, yeah, and ham and cheese, comma, or peanut butter and jelly. Ham and cheese for Rick. Peanut butter and jelly for Tim.
Wait, hold on. Let me check. Wait, Sarah has no pulse left. All right, thank you for the call, sir. We got a break. Back after this with Tim Riley and the Noon News Hour. Later on, CNN radio correspondent James Roop, Ed McCarthy. Teen drug slang. Is your child at risk? Top five and so forth. More at Kiss DVD giveaways too. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Here's the Four Horsemen. Yeah. Emerson radio program. Hey, let me ask you this. Have you become an AM 970 glorious bastard? If not, it's your loss. All this week, giving away copies of Kissology Volume 2, that DVD. We're giving away on the air, but we're also giving away copies of that to selected AM 970 glorious bastards. So if you are not one, you got to go to 970.am, sign up right now. Also, we'll give away the AST Do Tour passes all last week. This week, Kissology Volume 2, some copies of that going out to the glorious bastards. Also, what else? Well, next week, I got to talk to Susan and see if I can announce this other thing yet. It's not huge, but it is cool. We got that. Also, tomorrow we'll be announcing this week's glorious bastard of the week, which I think this is the last week to win Rockfest tickets for being a glorious bastard. So you want to be signing up, 970.am. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Ministry of Truth, Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
No, two middle school boys arrested on sex abuse charges have been released from Yamhill County Detention Center. They're in possession of their parents and must remain under 24-hour adult supervision. The assistant DA down there said the boys' behavior ranged from a pat on the behind to two boys getting on either side of girls and rubbing their pelvic regions against them.
See, this is the thing when they were... I'm treading into dangerous territory here, but this is when they... There was all the media, and I know this because this is what we do every single day. The media simplifies things to just a ridiculous extreme, boils them down to an interesting sentence, and then completely misrepresents the story over and over and over again.
We try.
I was going to say, we do our best to fill entire days with that. See also Tony Snow. So, but when the media was saying, two boys are going to have to register as sex offenders because they patted a girl's bottom, that's clearly part of it, but I think, like, everybody knew that there had to be more to it than that. I mean, everyone can say what they want about the Nancification of American schools, but I knew there was more to it than that. Because didn't we have this story, isn't this from much earlier in the year that this initially happened? And they also said it was, how do I put this, there was some spanking of the front as well, sort of?
Apparently this happened last week.
Well, no way. These are the two kids that were going to have to register as sex offenders.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but the actual... The incident itself happened, like, early in the year, I think.
That's what I thought, too.
Well, who's that from? Is it from KGW? Mm-hmm. Well, I might have known. I mean, seriously. Really, honestly, it's a miracle that they even know where the comma key is. So, anyway, I don't know. But So there was some, what we used to call, was there some grinding, Tim? Was there some freaking that was happening?
Well, according to the police report, last Thursday, a school staff member observed students slapping another student's bottoms. The staff member ordered the students to stop, but they did not. During the course of their investigations, school administrators and police officers uncovered more serious activity that led to police action. By running by and slapping on the bottoms, that's not what they've been charged with, says McMinnville Police Captain Ron Edgel. Now, that's included in the report, but that's not what gets you sexual abuse in the first
right,
degree.
Right, it was like a lot of crotch rubbing and so forth.
The students learned some of their behavior from the party boy dance made popular by the movie Jackass.
I don't know. Sarah, please? Youth liaison?
I'm not with the kids.
Party
I don't
boy
know.
Dance.
The party boy dance?
Yes, they... all right, whatever. How old are these kids?
12 and 13.
Yes, they couldn't possibly have learned it from the fact that they're 12 and 13 and are flooded with hormones and are equipped with penises. They couldn't possibly. It had to have come from Johnny Knoxville. Oh, by the way, speaking of things that came from people, Tim, this is a gift for you from one of the members of the audience.
It is. Oh, Independence Day.
On VHS.
Less than an hour.
Thank you.
Aircraft from here will join others from around.
Isn't that sweet, Tim?
That is.
And you know why that is, Tim?
Thank you.
It's because someone heard your story about having to pawn your VHS copy of Independence Day.
Is this the same one?
Probably. See if it has your name on it.
We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Yes, we do, Tim.
And they even remember to rewind it.
Were they kind?
They were kind.
All right.
Well, thank you.
I think that's actually a rental copy. It's got a little barcode on the inside there.
It may be my original one.
Yeah. Good times. So, yeah, they heard your tear-jerking story about having to pawn your... How much did you get for pawning a VHS copy of Independence Day?
Well, I had some other videos, too. So I had five of them in all, and I got $13.
That was amazing, actually, that you
that's
even got $13.
That's enough to eat in L.A. for a week
totally.
If you shop at the dollar store.
You buy one of those Okie dogs. All right. Excellent.
Oh, I'm flabbergasted.
Did you ever go to an Independence Day? Did you ever go to a pawn shop and see something that you previously pawned there and it's been marked up for like four times what you got for it?
But usually I buy my stuff back.
Oh, no, I was never able to do that. I don't think I ever once had, like, the money. I don't think I was ever once able to scrape together the bread to go in there and actually buy something. Can I get my toaster back? And it always lapsed. It was like, I would go, about 38 days, I would finally have the money. The thing was already out there for sale for, like, nine times whatever I had paid for it or gotten paid for it. So that's it. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's your Independence Day thing.
Well, thank you. Whoever did that?
Some guy. He didn't leave his name. No, I don't know. Wait, Scotty, do we know his name? No, we don't know. Some guy.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Two men accused of killing a Texas girl during her visit to Oregon last month now face charges of attempted rape and sex abuse.
Is this the story that K2 called, quote, a rape gone wrong?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
But this is the coined version of the story.
Okay.
So these illegal aliens, according to court documents, this fellow Rivera Gamboa woke to the sounds of his cousin and this woman countryman on the floor. Ariano Gamboa was reportedly on top of the girl as she struggled beneath him. And I think we all heard the rest of the story after that. So, yeah, the hearing is set for September 17th.
You know what I don't understand about this? And I don't mean to be stirring this hornet.
The illegal alien part?
Yes.
Because this entire state is a refuge for do not ask and do not tell for illegal aliens.
That's exactly.
The entire state. It is the only state in the United States that does this.
Now, when you say this, what do you... Because here's...
You cannot ask someone's immigration status here.
What do you mean? Of course you can. When
arrested. In other words, the cops didn't know that they were legal aliens.
But they... Oh. Okay. So that you can't ask their immigration status, but you can say, like, show me your ID.
Yeah.
And if they don't have ID of any kind... You say, what's your name? What's your social security number? Let's not be foolish about this. We do live in a somewhat Orwellian society. Everything, this has been my complaint for years.
Oh, but I've seen people being like, go for no IDs before, even on the max.
But I mean,
when they didn't have tickets.
Yeah, but not having a ticket and then having just like raped and killed someone. Those are two different worlds, it seems like. So, although to be fair, I guess they retained the guys for those. You know, they kept them in custody, but they got hit for all these vehicular crimes before. Here's my question. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is this.
Yes.
This is like, for example, this is why it irritates me so much that there is such a thing as being ticketed for no proof of insurance. That's retarded. Because the idea that you are not on record or in a database somewhere is just absurd. The idea, I mean, let's be, your personal information is in about 1,500 different computer databases all over the country. Think about all the different computers that have your information on file. And I'm not blaming the cops for this. They're just doing what they're told. But to tell me that when I get pulled over, that it is impossible to look onto a computer and see if I am insured, registered, and have a license is ridiculous. We all know that information is readily accessible in the database. We all know that you don't really have to have a paper copy of your stupid insurance card with you. They can look it up. They don't because it's a revenue-generating device. If you don't have your paper insurance card, they can hit you for like $400 or whatever. So that's a revenue generator. I guess my question is, this email says, Rick, this is from M, and M says, Rick, I am really confused. I don't understand why landlords aren't required to ask for ID before renting, particularly when it comes to the so-called war on terrorists. I suppose it is possible that if landlords were required to ask for green cards, then all the sleeper cells might take up under the bridge space from the homeless. But it just seems to me that if we're at war with terrorists, why aren't people required to show ID before renting long-term? And this guy says exactly what we all would say, too.
Here's another part of this. Oregon is the only state on the West Coast that openly acknowledges that it issues driver's licenses to illegal aliens.
It's just doesn't...
In addition, Oregon is one of only five states that does not verify the social security numbers of driver's license applicants. So, the result is...
Thanks
Oregon...
for announcing that, by the way.
The result is that Oregon has become a magnet for ID theft and illegal immigration.
Thanks. Attention, terrorists. Anyway, this guy says, this woman says, I don't have a grievance with them. They seem, said, the illegals living in my neighborhood seem nice for the most part. Blah, 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 blah. He said, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And again, doesn't make any sense to me either. And why, I mean, again, it just, it also just seems inconsistent. Look, because, I mean, we're constantly complaining that the government overregulates and has too many laws and puts their hand into your pocket too many times. We're constantly complaining that the government surveils us too much and the government is constantly monitoring our behavior. Why would there be this one insane, retarded exception, which they know applies almost exclusively to criminals?
Yeah.
And yet they just choose not to enforce it. It just makes no sense. It's just illogical. That's kind of my whole problem with it, is it just doesn't make any sense at all. So when you get arrested or pulled over by the cops are not allowed to ask if you are here illegally.
Correct.
So when you get a driver's license, you are not required to use your correct Social Security number.
Right. Oregon is only one of five states that does not verify the Social Security numbers of driver's license applicants.
Because why would you want to do that? For what possible reason?
Jesus. So it all starts there.
So this guy says, by the way, you do not even need to prove residency, Rick, to get an Oregon driver's license. Is that true? So is it? So when you
I
go to get
that's a, true. I think that's true. And I turn mine over. You have to give back your older license because I believe they punched a hole in my California license.
Yeah. No, they do. But I mean, so if you're getting your first license, or let's say just wild speculation, you're illegal. And you go there to get your license. What is it? They just you just write down your address and they don't check it, or do you just not have to? I thought you had to provide. I thought you had to provide like a power bill or some. I thought you had to show like a letter, something sent to you with your name and address on it from a like a utility company or something. But I guess maybe that doesn't. I guess that shows that you are somewhere. I guess it doesn't show that you are a legal resident.
No.
Do you at least have to check a box that says I am a legal resident?
I don't remember what I
probably checked. Not. Well, probably not, because that would be perjury, I would imagine, because I'm assuming that that's one of those things where I solemnly swear that this information is correct. So it seems like it's probably you probably don't even have to check a box claiming that you actually live here legally. It's just the government is just so maddening about this because they just the government is just up our ass in so many ways. And yet in this one bizarre exception, they just completely look the other way. Just don't pay any attention at all. Good God. All right. Yeah, well, see, Scotty is typing on the screen, you must have three pieces of ID, but that's not true. Or address verification, birth certificate, Social Security number. Well, that's, okay, well, first of all, that's not true. And even, okay, but even if it was, if they're not verifying the Social Security number, then that's irrelevant. That it doesn't make any, then there's no point to it. It makes no sense at all. All right, fine. I'm past it.
Who there? You're talking about something else.
I guess, I mean, you know, it's not going to, I mean, the more I talk about it, the more it's just not going to make any sense to me. You know what I mean? It's just not, you know, and this should, I guess, bear repeating. It has nothing to do with anybody personally. It's just illogical. It just doesn't, it's just a bad way to run a country. Mm. You know what I mean? All right.
Now, this is a state law. This isn't a federal law.
Yeah. All right.
So we just run things differently here in the state than they do it any other way.
Sure, Tom Potter will fix that any day now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Portland City Council is considering whether to require businesses to lock up spray paint. This is part of an effort to cut down on Portland's growing graffiti problem. This ordinance is proposed by Commissioner Randy Leonard. It will require businesses to keep logs of who buys spray paint while checking the customer identification. So I wonder if they verify Social Security numbers for this.
And this is like, well, this is like the New York thing, right? Because in New York, I think actually in New York, it is illegal to have spray paint on you if you are under 18. I think if you're a minor, you can't even actually carry that. Let's see. How about this? This guy says, hey, Rick, my wife had to get a new driver's license because of Homeland Security. They no longer issue a plastic encoded state card as before. They now punch in information into an Adobe Acrobat Writer and print you an official paper ID that does count as your legal ID until the real one arrives in a couple weeks or so. So it should be noted, the paper used for these high-tech temp cards can be scanned and then altered in Photoshop. Excellent.
Fantastic.
Scotty, should I be taking any of these unscreened calls? It could be about something. Anything at all? Well, let's just... Sure. Okay, thanks. Hi, whoever this is. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, it's Brent here in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, I just replaced my ID, actually, the other day. I lost my wallet at the bar, and same thing. Yeah, they gave me a paper ID that easily I could forge in Sony F and Photoshop. Anybody who has limited knowledge to Photoshop could do it. And then they said they're going to send me mine in, like, 2 to 3 weeks. And I'm like, okay, what's up with this? Yeah, and but I think they are a little more stricter now on, like, the verification of, like, your Social Security number and things like that. They're, like, starting to try and change the law because of
a lot of complaints on the whole non-verification of Social Security number, things like that.
I mean, it just seems like, look, when you go to buy something online with a credit card, they immediately know whether you can do that or not. Like, if you try to buy something with a credit card and your name is misspelled, your address is wrong, your credit card number is wrong, the expiration date is wrong, that little three-digit code on the back of your credit card is put in incorrectly, it kicks it right back and it says, no, try again. And if you do it, like, twice more and it doesn't work, look, if I try to log into my, you know, my Gmail or my Yahoo Mail, if I get that wrong a few times, you know, it tells me, like, sorry, who are you, why are you meddling, and it locks you out. If you try to buy something on Amazon and your information isn't put in right, it won't let you do it. The idea that I can go get a driver's license and just make up a freaking Social Security number from scratch and no one catches it is just a little troubling, you know?
Well, you actually have to have the card, but, I mean, you could probably phony up a card, too.
Oh,
I mean, I don't deny that.
My Social Security card. Does anybody here still carry their original Social Security card that they got?
No, I have a color copy of mine.
Okay. Tim?
I have mine that's at home.
I have the one they gave me when I was, like, 13, 14. I don't even know why I had to have it. I think maybe to open a bank account or something. And it literally, they typed it on like a Selectric. I mean, it was just, it's like a blue piece of paper.
Exactly.
That's all dog-eared and beat all to hell. A signature that no longer even looks like my signature because it was 20 years ago. And literally typed on it with like a Smith Corona. I mean, I could duplicate that tomorrow. And I don't know anything about anything and I could do that.
Well, mine's a little newer. It has the Oregon stamp on it, though. Right. That would be the hardest part to phony up is the Oregon stamp because you can actually see the imprint of it on the back side and the front side.
I think all that requires, though, is that's where you get those guys that, like, you know, will make you a phony ID for $20 because all you have to do is go buy, like, one of those little crimper things, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. You could probably do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to spend the time and do it, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's not doable. I'm just saying they're trying to make it harder now.
It's true. Hey, yeah. did you ever buy a fake ID?
Yeah, I did, actually, when I was about 17.
What was the name you used?
It was like Victor Vine.
Victor Vine. Where did that come from?
That's what they gave me.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. Fantastic. I named myself Jason McMaster. After the lead singer from Dangerous Toys.
I can't believe what I named it, but I can't remember what I named it, but there used to be this ID shop in Seattle right across from the Westlake Mall, or the one downtown with the monorail attached to it.
Right,
it was right behind the McDonald's. There was just this doorway.
Sweet.
And you could go in and just tell them whatever age, whatever name, and they just print it up for you for like $5.
And you got it to drink?
I got it to smoke.
Really?
When I was there, yeah.
Look at you. I got mine to see Quiet Riot.
Youngsters my age, you didn't have to worry about it because the drinking age back then was 18.
And you had now, you didn't have one of these, but your parents probably had one of those driver's licenses with no picture.
Correct.
Ah, what a weird time that was. Driver's license, no freaking picture on it. Do I want to take this call blaming everything on the ACLU?
Yeah.
I can just hear, like, the American president rolling in my head now. Bob, why aren't you a member? Hello. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
That's not the point. I'm not calling to blame the ACLU. I'm
yes, Scotty.
Calling to get, first of all, I'm not some, you know, jingoistic Colonel Flagg kind of
Colonel Flagg. Good reference, sir. Well done.
Thank you. He's one of my favorite characters.
Hey, can I just ask you real quickly? Doesn't that guy who played Colonel Flagg look like the guy who played what's his name, Jay Peterman on Seinfeld? They look a lot alike. They look very similar. Yeah, they do. If you look at them, like, one kind of looks like a younger version of the other. Anyway, I'm sorry. What's up, sir?
Maybe when they're younger. Colonel Flagg in real life has gone on and died.
Oh, well, never.
Anyway, my point was, you know, I think that when you look at this whole kind of thing, and you, if I'm gathering right, are incredulous over how easy it is for these people to remain amongst us, you know, but I also know that you're a staunch supporter of the ACLU and other kind of causes and lines of thought that way, and that's at the forefront of what, you know, keeps these people, enables these people to stay here. And I am not a Latino hater, but I do want the illegals, you know, I think that it's only fair that they go home. And I'm just saying that, you know, when you look at it that way, you've got to think about what the causes you support, what causes they in turn support.
Actually, it's in part due to the agriculture industry in the state.
I was just going to say, and look, don't get me wrong, I am a card-carrying member, as Michael Dukakis was once accused of being. I am a card-carrying member of the ACLU, literally, honestly. It's in my wallet. That being said, Obviously, no one ever finds a group or a cause or an organization with which they agree absolutely 100% of the time. There's some stuff the ACLU's done that I think is just not a good use of my dues paying and not a good use of their resources. That being said, I agree with about 98% of the stuff the ACLU has done. I'm never going to disown an organization whose sole purpose is to uphold the Bill of Rights, however that might be, that might be interpreted. I will say this. I think that there is an extreme slice of the liberal the wing in this country, the left wing, who just reflexively hate everything the government does. And so anytime the government does anything, their response is just automatically to assume that it's evil. And I think that's where a lot of this sort of lax attitude towards illegal immigration comes from. The idea that if the man does something, it must therefore automatically be wrong and you have to resist. And I do agree with you on that. There's this contrarian mindset that the instant there's a law passed, somehow it has to be resisted because it's evil. And I don't. But Tim also really nails it when Tim said, you know what, if Whitey wasn't greasing a bunch of politicians to keep, and you know, even Dennis Miller, who people paint as some sort of staunch Republican, even he was saying that he thinks Bush is in the pocket of big business on, you know, in illegal immigration, because that's who makes the money on it. The people who make money on illegal immigration are people who run businesses and factories that employ illegals and give them one-tenth of a living wage and no benefits and have them work 80 hours a week. If you started throwing CEOs in prison for this, you would see the illegal immigration problem dry up.
Well, and there's a bit of irony in that, too, in that, you know, the advocating and laws being passed and so forth for their being able to stay here. And yet, you're right, Whitey, quote unquote, the big rancher or farmer, does treat them shoddily.
Whitey signs the checks.
Yeah, exactly.
Whitey signs the checks.
Seriously, as somebody once said about the drug war, you know what? If you started throwing or if you started executing bankers who launder drug money, drug problem gone. Drug war on drugs won. If you started imprisoning people who run companies, large white collar people who run these companies, you would see the illegal immigration problem go away. It is a supply and demand society. It's a capitalist world, and the reason that illegal immigrants flow here so readily is because they know that they will be employed and that the government will never do anything to the companies who employ them.
And part of the problem is too is, you know, the fellows that are the Latinos that are out working on the farm. Those guys are out and gals are out there working, and they're working hard, and they're just trying to make a living and get by, whether it's here or in Mexico. But the I don't know what adjective to use, those fellows that killed this young lady and that so many of them that you hear about in the news that are just, you know, ne'er-do-wells, I mean, those are some of the people that really...
Well, there
are plenty of whites who do the same thing.
I was just going to say, there's ne'er-do-wells of every stripe. I got to tell you, about 98% of the people who live on my block are legals, and they're just horrible people, all of them. And, you know, and they live here legally. So, I will, but the problem
second
is...
Second and third generation.
Exactly. And yeah, I was saying, already raising the crop of criminals for 2070.
But a little bit of the difference being, though, is if they go down there and they do their ne'er-do-well and down there, then it doesn't end up eventually harming us or causing our judicial system billions of dollars for trying them and incarcerating them.
It just seems ridiculous that if you bust somebody, you can't find out if they're illegal, and if they're illegal, you can't kick them out. I mean, it just, you know, it's not like we need more things to tax the American legal system. All right, thank you, sir. That's Pat. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So did you hear that prostitution on Northeast 82nd is becoming a problem?
No.
Yes, police are working.
It's the Street of Roses.
It is. Police are working hard to combat the problem. So far, recently, they've arrested 46 women and 19 men. One of the women who lives there, who refuses to move, says the area has changed her landscape. Jane Zugman has removed a large Japanese maple tree from her front yard in 82nd because prostitutes and johns were having sex in her front yard between the tree and the front of her house.
Well done.
The ring of flowers and dirt patch now marked where the tree once stood. She's lived there for 30 years on 82nd, and she's not planning on moving.
That really does sound like some sort of a comment. How much for the ring of flowers and a dirt patch?
Yep.
That'll be $75. Okay.
So something has to be done about these prostitutes who now run the risk of having their vehicle sealed and going to jail.
This is, what do they do to Johns?
Let's see here. Under Oregon law, seized vehicles may be claimed by all persons listed on the title, which means persons caught with prostitutes going to pick up their car must sometimes bring their spouse along as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. 82nd and where, I wonder? Is it just the whole stretch of 82nd forever?
Is there a good part of 82nd?
No.
No.
No? No, there is not. Let's close this out with these two calls, and then we'll break, and we'll come back. Hi, John. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. Hey. Sorry, on a lighter note here. Yeah, I didn't want to. you know, you were talking about fake Social Security numbers, and I thought you might be drawn into that heated grammatical debate. So I wanted to kind of just say, I like the excuse for Richard Cheese, for the Steven Seagal one. But
which he did. He totally delivered it on stage, that he curb-stomped Steven Seagal to gain his power, yes.
I love that. But, you know, isn't there a rock group called String Cheese Incident?
Yes.
Okay, just imagine this, and I like the choice that the caller made, but everyone wants to get injured, like on a motorcycle or, you know, under some act of sexual prowess or something like that, if you're a macho guy or whatever, but what if he was with three supermodels and it involved String Cheese in a hotel room? Then he could rename his group the next String Cheese Incident.
The what String Cheese Incident?
Like the next String Cheese.
The next incident. String Cheese, okay.
Wah, wah, wah.
Okay, because you were... There we go. We'll give you that because you recognized it. Yes. Excellent. All right. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, all right. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you. All right. There you go. And this is it. Final call on Social Security numbers, illegal immigrants, anything. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
Josh here. Well, unless my parents are lying to me and I'm a very white illegal alien about file checking their Social Security numbers, my Social Security card has my name spelled one way. And then my Oregon driver's license has my name spelled another way and my middle name as my first name.
Interesting. Well, you know, and they don't check. So I actually had a driver's license given to me one time. I went and applied for my driver's license. They printed it out. They spat it out of the machine. They handed it to me. And I looked down and they had misspelled my name. And I actually, I said, hey, and I gave it back because I didn't want a cop to, like, pull me over, looks at it, and then he thinks, you know, he throws me in the pokey because he thinks I'm on the lam or something. The state makes those mistakes all the time. Also this, they don't check Social Security numbers in a lot of places, and I know this because I did this one time. I forget where. It wasn't on some government form. It was for something else. It was something where they really shouldn't have been asking for my Social Security number. It was some... Was I buying something? Was I applying for a job? Anyway, years ago, Playboy magazine read this article in the Playboy forum, not like the Penthouse forum. The Playboy forum is sort of like a, you know, like a news and what's happening in society section. But they had an article about the Social Security number, and they printed an entire list of dead Social Security numbers, meaning not of dead people, but are ones that just went nowhere. Social Security numbers that were assigned to no one, that could not, that dead end, they couldn't be traced to anybody. And for a while, I just used one just to sort of see what would happen. And they would say, give me your Social Security number. And I memorized one of these Social Security numbers from Playboy, and I just gave them this dead end Social Security number. And you know what? I never heard anything about it. No one ever called me on it. So it is interesting to note that the government doesn't even check their own handiwork very well.
Yeah, I was just going to say one more thing before the days of these kids and their iPods and whatnot. It was pretty good for when you get them 10 CDs for 99 cents or whatever, and you're supposed to buy some, and you got two names.
Oh, that
worked out pretty well for me.
I wonder if that industry has gone away. I wonder if the RCA and Columbia Record and Tape Clubs have just gone under. Interesting. Thank you, Josh.
Have a good one. All right,
there you go. What is that movie I saw? It had a terrible title, so I can't remember, but there was a documentary that came out about 2 years ago. Pretty shoddily made. I don't think I'd watch it again. It was good for a watch. But it was a documentary about working at the CBS Record and Tape Club, or the Columbia Record and Tape Club. One of those buy eight for a penny and then you have to buy 10 more. And what made it kind of hard to watch was that it was all shot in, like, video diary form. Like some idiot, 20-something who was there just like, and he was doing that idiot 90s thing of like, that Reality Bites thing of like turning the camera to his own face and doing his thoughts into the video camera all day. But it was worth it to see the inner workings of a record and tape club, which is one of those things you'd always sort of thought about. And his job was to design that catalog that you would get in the mail once a month, pitching you like, Gloria Estefan is one of, you know, and then like a huge section about Gloria Estefan. All right. Fantastic. We should break. We'll come back. Tim Riley continues on the other side with the noon news hour. Later on, Jim Roop, Ed McCarthy, top five, the Kissology Volume 2, Kissology Volume 2 on DVD, and our hunt for the second worst story ever. Stay there.
Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. This is Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Oh, no. Somebody's crashed into a 7-Eleven.
Oh, no.
Happened this morning at Southeast 148th Avenue and Division. No more details are available. The whole front of the store looks like it was crashed into.
Hey, whatever happened with all those bones they found? Wasn't that yesterday?
Yeah.
They found some
bones in a shoe.
Bones in
a... They didn't know if it was the bones of a person or an animal who wears shoes. So they're going to investigate that further.
Okay.
An autopsy shows a man shot and killed by a Salem police officer was shot in the chest. An attorney representing the officer says Corporal John Humphreys was forced to shoot the car theft suspect in self-defense when the suspect stole his taser and fired at him when he was trying to slap the handcuffs on Cesar Alejandro Gonzalez Mejia of Staten. And apparently this Gonzalez Mejia guy has a criminal record, 2 outstanding warrants out for his arrest on drug charges. A man in Springfield who told police, "Just shoot me." Well, got what he asked for.
Well done.
The man was critically wounded in a police shooting. He was armed with a toy gun he had taken from a neighbor's garage. 47-year-old Thomas Hager was shot 3 times by Springfield police officers in critical condition. There is no way an officer under these circumstances could have known that the weapon was not real. Well, that is a thing. A woman called police Sunday and said Hager had threatened to harm himself and destroyed property inside her rented duplex. So this must be the landlady, so she should have called. Hager ignored Krieger's orders to drop the weapon and yell, "Just shoot me," as he advanced. He was also bleeding from a self-inflicted knife wound to the neck.
Ah, okay.
It's kind of, I don't know, some home Al-Qaeda type of thing. At a press conference, officials displayed a photo of a fake gun, and it was taken from a neighborhood's garage from a child. So that's that. Hillsborough County investigators say a brazing torch was used to steal about $50,000 worth of metal material from a construction site. This was taken from the Portland Clinic Medical Center, which is under construction. A torch was used to enter a secure area of the site where several construction companies were working. Items stolen include spools of copper wire, copper fittings, and stainless steel drain pans.
I can't possibly imagine what that metal's going to be used for, where it's going to be sold, or what the proceeds are going to be used to buy. It's a mystery.
Yeah. And why are no questions asked when big spools of things are brought in to be sold?
I was just going to ask that same question.
I mean, I was given third degree for trying to pawn Independence Day on VHS.
You know what? I was just going to make that observation. Anytime you try to, like, sell a VCR, anything, this isn't stolen. At least they ask you, right? Yeah. Is this stolen? No. Okay, great. That'll be $12. Here's your ticket. But it's like I was telling you, that episode of The Wire, which, granted, is a fictional show, but, I mean, seriously, it was like, I think I told you there was some episode of The Wire where either lightning or a car crash or something. Something had knocked down a huge streetlight. Mm-hmm. And so then there's these homeless guys taking the streetlight, putting it onto 3 different shopping carts, and shoving it slowly down the street to the recycling place where the guy gives them, like, you know, $200. And it is always the same thing where it's like a homeless guy mysteriously shows up at the recycling plant. What's this? Well, it's 500 miles of copper tubing. Well, where did you get it? Found it.
So this happened to involve at least 2 people and a vehicle due to the weight of the item stolen.
Fantastic. I mean, there's no, like, they're in some fence somewhere where there's some guy named, you know, Vinny the Fingers who will sell that for you. You got to take it to the recycling place. And the guy at the recycling place has to go, "Well, that's great. Sign here on the dotted line. All right, just an X then. All right, thank you, sir. And here's your money." I mean, it seems like catching criminals in this city really ought not to be as difficult as it apparently is. It does seem like it. The solutions might present themselves rather easily.
Well, this is rather troubling. Is it these people are going to get this right? The next time you go to the airport, there may be more eyes on you than you notice. Now they have specially trained security personnel who are watching your body language and your facial expressions for clues that you might have some bad intentions in mind.
Oh, I am going to abuse that and F with that. It's like nobody's business.
Now, the watcher could be the attendant who hands you the tray for your laptop or the one standing behind the ticket checker.
I am going to make crazy eyes every single time I go to the airport, and I'm going to like just flex my hands spasmodically. That's what I'm going to, and I'm going to grind my teeth a lot, and maybe just lick myself.
Who on earth gave the okay for these people to do this?
Tim, they don't need, Tim, why do you hate America? Get those thoughts out of your head. Change your body language.
These are behavior detection officers.
Uh-huh.
They're part of several recent security upgrades.
Minimum wage with a gun.
He described them as a wonderful tool. You, sir, are a wonderful tool.
I'm totally saying that. The next time I go through the airport, I'm totally going to say, you are a wonderful tool.
A wonderful tool is able to identify and do risk management, as if these retarded people can actually do this.
Okay, here's another thing I'm going to do. When I go through, I'm just going to reach out and start licking my arm. Mm-hmm. Just a lot. Just, you know, while I'm waiting in line, I'm just going to lean and just begin licking, maybe chewing on my own flesh. You know what I mean? As I go through, I just start biting my own wrist like a dog with a milk bone. Fantastic. I'm going to cause all kinds of trouble.
Apparently, this airport has been underway as a pilot program that began last year and is very successful at identifying suspicious airline passengers and has netted drug carriers, illegal immigrants, and terrorism suspects.
Sure it has.
But they won't say any more.
No, of course not.
At the heart of this new screening system is a theory that when people try to conceal their emotions, they reveal their true feelings.
Oh, I am all over that.
These are called micro-expressions.
That's even better than that business of...
Fear and disgust are the number ones.
The shirt that says, I am not a terrorist. I'm totally... What if I did this? I wonder if they'd let me do this. I'm always thinking of ways just to screw with the airlines. Okay, so in addition to sort of clenching my fists spasmodically, what if I did this? Remember all that business with, remember those nitwits, those idiots who were rioting over the picture of Mohammed?
Oh, yeah.
Were we on the air when that happened?
I don't think so.
That's too bad. That was a moment where it felt like the whole world was on the brink of imploding. And because that's when South Park tried to show it, and Comedy Central wouldn't let them. I wonder if I could, I wonder if they would let me get on an airplane with a shirt that had a picture of Mohammed.
I suppose.
I mean, do you think they would?
Maybe.
Because remember, wasn't that in Dutch? Was that the Dutch newspaper where that was happening?
Mm-hmm.
Or someplace like that, someplace with wooden shoes, where they, wooden shoes and Aryan girls?
That's the only wooden shoe country that I know of.
No, there's Holland.
Well, that's where the Dutch live.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is Holland in Denmark?
No, Holland is separate from Denmark.
Where do they have wooden shoes?
Holland.
In Holland.
Where do the Dutch live?
In Holland.
Don't they live in Denmark?
No.
Are those Danes?
Danes.
That's like Humphrey Bogart. I was down picking up a couple of Danes. And then just got some women in wooden shoes.
We're just trying to get you to England successfully. And we'll deal with the rest of the world at some other point.
Okay. But there was that whole thing where there was a bunch of nutcase Muslims who were rioting or threatened to kill somebody or whatever because that newspaper published a picture of Muhammad, and apparently it's like...
Oh, that was Denmark.
Denmark.
That was in Holland.
Okay.
Holland is where the Dutch live.
Okay. No, let's not start this again. So there you... Rotten Bishop. So apparently, there was all this rioting because I guess you are not supposed to show a picture of Muhammad. I guess he's not supposed to be seen. Like, he can never see his face.
How can he become as popular as Jesus?
Does
Muhammad have blue eyes?
I strongly suspect. I don't know.
He has lousy PR people.
That is true. Really, truer words have never been spoken, Tim Riley. Anyway, but I guess you're not allowed to show a picture of Muhammad. I guess that's the thing. You can't show his face for whatever reason.
There are no such things as Muhammad candles.
Because blah, 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 blah. There are no black velvet Muhammad paintings. It's just black. It's just a big square of black velvet with nothing on it.
What good is that?
So, and then there was that business where during that whole scandal, because the newspaper kept showing it, like they kept running a cartoon drawing of Muhammad's head. And so people kept, like, trying to bomb the newspaper. And then South Park tried to show the face of Muhammad in an episode of South Park, and Comedy Central wouldn't let them. This is a true story. I don't know if you remember this. About a year and a half ago, Comedy Central would not let South Park show a picture of Muhammad because they're like, I don't know, we don't want to be attacked. So,
What does he look like?
I don't know. He's some guy, you know, kind of got one odd eye that rolls to the left, I think.
So he doesn't wear flip-flops and walk around the desert.
No. Well, he might. I mean, really, who can say? I think it's up to interpretation. I think he has bad skin. And so I'm wondering if I had a picture of Muhammad on a T-shirt, if they would let me wear that through security.
Oh, how would they know who Muhammad is?
That's true. That's another good question. If his face can't be put anywhere, how would they even know that it's a picture? That's how the newspaper should have handled it. They could have just not labeled it. Guess who this is? And then just no, but then no caption. And then when they push, I just go, no, it's Merlin Olsen. That's it. There you go. That's what my response would do.
Or that guy from The Doors who killed this American poet.
It's Jim Morrison.
Yes.
There should totally be Jim Morrison, Merlin Olsen, and then Muhammad, you know, but no captions for any of them.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hi.
Hey, well, before you go screwing with the airport security, beware the man with the rubber glove. That's all I have to say.
No.
They probably already do that anyway.
Yeah, the cavity search.
No, man, if you F with them, they're just looking for a reason, those bastards.
It's true. No, before I do it, though, I'm going to pack my orifices with broken glass. That'll show them.
All right, thank you. Bye now.
The baggage guys at PDX are big listeners of ours. So.
Oh, sorry. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, how do they know what Muhammad looks like if they never see his picture?
That is a good point. I was trying to make him feel good. That is a good point, sir. No, I don't know. I think the mistake the newspaper made was saying, this is a picture of Muhammad. I think if they just published him and said, like, you know, mystery guest, you know, or whatever, I think it would have been okay. Yes.
Or not a picture of Muhammad.
Totally. There was a great picture that appeared somewhere on the net where it was, like, a picture of a donut, you know, with, like, Jimmy's on top of it. And the caption was, Muhammad as a donut with sprinkles, which was great. You know what I mean? All right.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank
not
you.
A picture of Muhammad. It's not Muhammad. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, getting back to this airport stuff. An Atlanta-based flight attendant, and not someone flying, a flight attendant for Atlantic Southeast Air will appear in court again on 9/11. Sarah Mills is accused of getting drunk on a flight that was preparing to leave for Atlanta. Let's see here. Atlanta TV station is airing a videotape of a clearly belligerent Sarah Mills being booked by the Lexington police station.
Is this going to be clean, do you suppose?
Well, it's from Metro. It should be okay.
Sarah, call immediate medical attention.
Yes?
What for?
Because I'm thinking about getting drunk on a plane. Punching some people.
About what?
Punching some people.
Excellent.
She's the flight attendant.
Well done.
Don't ask for too much.
Well, you know they're always thinking about punching people.
Here's Sarah Mills being booked into the police station.
That is my
week
of
the
flight attendant. Thank you for everybody in here for getting a
and more for the drunken flight attendant.
Excuse me, that was my ID.
Yeah, excellent. Fantastic. Coffee, tea, or a big fist in the face. Well done. Coffee, tea, or a bunch of fives, as the British would say. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, I was going to say the reason that everybody was blown up about that was because it was actually an editorial comic that they said made him look bad, you know, kind of like a dopey picture.
Well, it was like, it was Muhammad, but like in his turban there was like a bomb or something, right?
Yeah, and plus, a big thing with Islam is that any picture of anything is considered idolatry.
Idolatry, yeah.
All their art has no, like, thing then.
Yeah, well, and that's why those idiot Taliban guys.
How can they join the information age in that?
No, like, the information age. No, they're not even to the Bronze Age. Mm-hmm. I mean, really. If you remember those idiot guys that they those guys that blew up the statues in Afghanistan, do you remember that?
Yeah, all those ancient.
I don't know if we all remember this. This is before 9/11. This was like how we should have known that the Taliban guys, you know, were just people who needed to be dealt with and sterilized. They had these in Afghanistan. They had these ancient statues, and I apologize. I don't really know the history. I forget exactly what it. But you know, these.
I think they were Buddhas.
These amazing
2,000-year-old Buddhas.
Yeah, these amazing statues. If you've seen Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers, I believe it is, when they're going down the river and they pass those huge statues of the gatekeepers and the guardians or whatever, those massive statues. So they had these in Afghanistan, like carved out of the side of a cliff. They were just unbelievably beautiful. And, of course, these idiot religious nutcases go, well, we can't have statues of people. That's idolatry because you can't have paintings, statues, pictures, anything of people or of images of people because it's idolatry. So these thousands of year old statues hewn out of the living rock, they took a bunch of rocket launchers and then just obliterated them, blew them into little pieces. That's when we should have gone over there and just really just cleaned house. Right then. Right then and there. That tells you exactly what you're dealing
with.
What's
Muhammad's last name?
Jones.
Because I'm looking at this guy claims to be Muhammad Ali, but obviously it isn't.
He's like, that's a czar, I think. I think that's Nicholas V.
No, it says Muhammad Ali, but that clearly isn't the one that we know of.
He's a white man with a beard.
Mm-hmm.
There's a joke there somewhere, but I don't know what it is. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, bye now.
Yeah, that's how you know. That's how you knew those guys were going to be trouble, you know. What are you going to do today? Well, I'm going to blow up some art and beat a woman for thinking. Well, okay. Fantastic. Would you like some oil?
Well,
is George Bush.
Well, we should just nuke them now, then.
We really should. No argument from me. All right.
And save all the money for Social Security.
Put them on the list right after Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, The legendary Osmonds are reuniting on stage for the first time in more than 20 years.
I meant to get some Osmonds music to play into this
break. I can save this for later.
I'm sure Scotty has
some. No, go ahead. Scotty, do you have Down by the Lazy River by the Osmonds?
Anyone will do, Scotty.
If you have you do? Fantastic. Will you please be putting Down by the Lazy River in the RAS folder? Thank you. That's the best song ever. All right.
So this is the 50th anniversary of the family's first experience in show business. The barbershop quartet, the Osmond Brothers, formed in 1957. But chart success only came after the addition of younger siblings Donnie and Jimmy in the 1970s.
Donnie could sing. He really could. Probably
all, six brothers, along with Sister Marie, perform at the reunion concerts in Vegas. It's just a reminder we're still one big happy family, says Merrill. Yes, we make a great shepherd's pie, adds Jimmy. And with a pretty garnish named Marie. It was the first time in decades that Donnie, Jimmy, Marie, Merrill, Wayne, Allen, and Jay had been performing together in public. Aren't they missing one? There was a deaf one, too.
Zeppo.
Yeah, well, he's not there.
Shemp. Wait, what's funnier? Zeppo Osmond? Shemp Osmond? Gummo Osmond.
I like Gummo.
That's it. Here we go. Gummo Osmond. Callback.
We do over 200 shows a year, says Wayne, explaining that some of the combination of the family is always on tour. Are these the real Osmonds, or just one or two?
It's Jack Russell's Osmonds.
The Osmond family have released more than 142 records and sold 100 million copies over the past 40 years. Let's see. Donny Osmond is the most successful, of course, with his solo career.
Yeah,
with three number ones to his name.
He's not hot as balls, though, like Marie.
Including the ballad Puppy Love.
They call it Puppy Love. You probably had to play that. No, you probably didn't, actually.
No, my sister had that album.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Younger brother Jimmy Osmond also became a favorite, mostly in England for some reason. More so in England than here. This is a BBC story. Yes, when we think about it, the 70s, it was drugs, sex, and alcohol, but we didn't do any of that, said the Osmonds. We were good, God-fearing, moral men.
I know this goes without saying. Even as I get ready to say this, I know it just sounds retarded because it seems like such an obvious statement, but the Osmonds, to this day, are just, I mean, in Utah, they're like the Blazers. I mean, really. In Utah, the Osmonds, they are the Blazers and Everclear and Matt Groening, like all rolled into one.
I guess they're the most famous export.
From Utah, and probably not only from Utah, but probably from the Mormon faith. They are probably, I mean, no joke, they're probably the most famous Mormons ever. I mean, you know, with the exception of Joseph Smith himself.
But what about that John Heater fellow? Well, not as big.
Not as big, because they had a huge impact over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing, they still own a lot of production houses, soundstages. Really, you don't know this, but, you know, unless you really look into it, but a lot of the commercials and movies you see on television were produced, I forget the name of it now, produced at the, they have their own, like, little Skywalker Ranch down there. Mm-hmm. They produce tons and tons of movies, records, television shows. It really is amazing. And I will not uncork my whole in defense of the Osmonds rant here. But I will say that the Osmonds, to me, are one of the great bittersweet stories in American music, because I'm not trying to impugn their faith, but I am saying they were really talented, but because they were just this, they were perceived as just being this white knockoff of the Jackson 5, which I suppose is a little accurate, because Donnie was sort of the Michael, and they had a very similar vocal delivery, and they did that one Bad Apple song, which is like a complete ripoff of the Jackson 5. Had the Osmonds, though, not been so strongly LDS, had they not been so Mormon, I think they would have had a real big, huge crossover career that lasted longer than it did. Because they did have a lot of hits in a short period of time. The Osmonds, and of course they had the Donnie and Marie show on television. I mean, it's not like they're failures. They were big, and everybody still knows who they are.
Was that produced in Utah, or was that done in Hollywood?
I don't know the answer to that. I actually don't know. But I think if they had not been so hemmed in by their faith, they would have been able to record music that would have gained them more and long-lasting popularity. Because I know this sounds silly, but really, when they wanted to, the Osmonds really could rock. I know that that sounds stupid. And when I say that, that's one of those things that people sort of laugh at. It sounds like I'm some idiot wearing a shirt that says, "The Osmonds rock," like to be kooky. But really, when they put their mind to it, the Osmonds were really a great... I know this will sound like heresy... But when they put their mind to it, the Osmonds really did sound like a sort of younger, little more bubblegummy Rolling Stones. It really is true, and people don't appreciate that fact. I will also say that they had a great fusion of rock and gospel that sounds like it would be terrible, but was really wonderful. I mean, they really were a great group at their peak. Most of what they did was crap, but that's because their dad was so against them being a rock band, that he constantly pushed them towards this terrible bubblegum material. But anyway, so there you go.
So was he the cruel Joe Jackson figure?
He wasn't cruel. He was just very pious, you know, very conservative, didn't want them to sing. I think he didn't, God, was it One Bad Apple? He didn't want them to sing because he thought, God, because he thought it was like code for some sexual thing. I think that's the song. He didn't want them to sing that because he thought that it was code for, like, getting it on somehow. So,
Well, the former Osmond Studios are now a radio station and an addiction treatment clinic.
Yeah. It's
so they sold it.
So they're no longer doing production then.
No.
Interesting. So, the Osmonds.
I guess they sold it.
An American story. Let's get an Osmonds call, and then we'll take a break. Hi.
Is this Donnie?
Hi, on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, hi, Rick. Hi, Sarah, and hi, Tim. So I have an amusing Osmond family anecdote.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Okay. Back in the probably almost 20 years ago now, I was going to school studying to be a sign language interpreter down in Orange County, California.
Uh-huh.
And had an opportunity through a friend to actually interpret a Osmond concert.
Excellent.
And I got to tell you, Rick, your comment about Marie.
Yeah.
Hot as balls.
Totally. Complete and crazy, too, which helps.
Oh, just insane. And this is one, I think the 87 she would have had, would she have had a child at that point or
not? Well, yeah, she's had like 100 of them, so probably.
Yeah, well, that's true. And she had a couple of the Rugrats running around. But they were all very, very nice people, very, very professional. But, and I got to wonder, was their dad kind of like Brian Wilson's father, do you suppose?
No, he was, by all accounts, he was not crazy, abusive, whatever. He was just very, very conservative and felt that they should make very careful that they didn't fall into the secular world. So he kept them doing bubblegum and religious music. And had they just been born into a different faith or family, I think they would have become a great American rock band. I really do.
Well, what about the song Puppy Love, though?
Well, but...
You know?
Well, we got to pay the bills, brother.
There you go. Thank you. Best
Thank you.
Ever.
All right.
Bye.
There you go. Well, we probably won't play this now, then, because we're going to be overtime. Maybe we'll come back with it. We'll take this call into the break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, when I was a very young lad, which for me was almost 40 years ago, the very first concert I ever saw, because I was in tow with my sisters, was, in fact, the Osmonds.
And?
It was... These guys, I was really into Motown, because I lived on a Marine base in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
All my friends were black, so Motown was the thing. These guys just rocked. I was a little kid going, great, I got to see the Osmonds and all that crap. And they did the song Crazy Horses.
Crazy Horses is the other one I was thinking of. That's a creepy sounding song, too.
Oh, but it was, they just rocked it. And then they did Can't Get Next to You. And it was Motown all the way.
Yep.
You would never tell that these guys were just wonderbread white, if you closed your eyes, you swear to God that, somehow that you were in a Motown room.
They are one of the great overlooked American bands. You are right about that, sir. All right. Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
All right. We probably have to break here. We'll break. We'll come back. Roop. I'll play a little Osmonds on the other side. Come back with some Osmonds. You don't say that a lot on the show. We'll come back with some Osmonds. Then we got some Jim Roop coming up for you. Later on, Mr. Skin, Ed McCarthy, Kissology Volume 2 on DVD, and our hunt for the second worst story ever. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Oh, he does. Yeah.
Really?
Seriously, if I told you this was Grand Funk Railroad with a horn section, you would believe me.
Come on, sing a boom, boom.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. The Big Boss time is 1:13. It's 503-733-2970. I have the 45 of that. I can't, I've lost track of the thousands of times I must have played this as a kid. It's great. Crazy Horse is great, too. Crazy Horses is clearly them trying to rip off Zeppelin. Great song, though. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Scotty's pushing to make it an All Osmonds Day. Make it All Osmonds and Rod Stewart, Scotty. It's 503-733-2970. You want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Here's what's coming up, my friends. We have Ed McCarthy coming up in just a moment. We'll talk to Scotty Jacy, who's shaking in the world of the Jays. Mr. Skin coming up. Tim Riley, the Kiss Contest. That's with two Ks there. Kissology Volume 2. Jim Roop, our hunt for the second worst story ever. And Lycus at 3, Dynamike at 7. Let's now take a visit to the South, my friends. I said McCarthy, the Et tu, Brute. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. Good recover, though. I don't think anybody noticed. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Hey, Rick. How are you?
How is life? How are things? How's the Kathmeister?
The Kathmeister is doing fine. She's doing good.
Excellent.
She's really excited about Elvis Week.
I was just going to say, do they have you standing outside Graceland with these nitwits who are lining up at night?
You know, I did that a few years ago, but I decided not to do that anymore.
I do mean to disparage the king. I'm not a big Elvis fan. I will admit that. And I understand that, especially to people perhaps in the South, I know that it is maybe heresy to say this. And look, I am a huge... I am a rock and roll fan. I grew up as a rock fanatic. I grew up listening to, you know, the antecedents of what I listen to today. I grew up listening to Bill Haley, to Chuck Berry, to Little Richard, to Rocket 88, to all of that stuff. I just am not a big Elvis fan. I never really was. For some reason, it's a thing that just never resonated with me. But I do recognize the cultural significance, obviously, of Elvis, which cannot be overstated. And, I mean, so he died, it's 30 years ago when? Tomorrow? 30 years?
Tomorrow.
30
yeah.
years ago
yeah.
tomorrow. And so these people stand in line. But I don't even think you can get in anymore, can you? Can you even get to where his grave is?
Actually, they have a little candlelight vigil, which is scheduled tonight. And that's about it, because they really keep Graceland under wraps. And it's not the way they want to have it, or they have everybody running roughshod all over the place.
Have you ever toured Graceland?
Say that again, Rick. I'm sorry.
Have you ever toured Graceland? Have you gone through the house?
I've not gone through the house. I've been on the grounds, though.
Because I think that there are whole sections of the house that you cannot even go to. And I know you were never able to go in, like, the bedroom or the bathroom, especially the bathroom where he died. You were never allowed to go in there. But I think as time has gone on, I think Priscilla Presley, who sort of runs that whole enterprise, she has, I think, closed off more and more of the house. But it is a thing that I do mean this sincerely, it is a thing that I will do. I do plan to go to Graceland because, again, I recognize how huge Elvis looms in the American pop culture. So you talked to Jerry Schilling, right? And was he a member of the Memphis Mafia?
He was a member of the Memphis Mafia, and he was really kind of interesting. I got a kick out of it. He had one funny story in particular where he was talking about they went gambling one night in Vegas. He said to Elvis, come on, let's go down and play some blackjack, thinking that Elvis wouldn't want to do that. Elvis said, sure. So they went ahead, played blackjack. Well, one thing led to another. They were getting crowds around him, and then they had decided to go to the bar. He's talking about, having a few drinks, and then all of a sudden they leave, and they said, it's time to go. And Elvis says, all right, we'll go. So they hop in a cab, and the guy says, take us to the Hilton. And the cab driver turns around, and he says, this is the Hilton.
The Elvis story, I mean, and I have a lot of Elvis stories that I've read or heard over the years, a lot of them because he intersects so often with other artists. There is a very famous story. There's actually two of these. There's a story about the Beatles going to visit Elvis and actually, like, jamming with him. There's a story about the Beatles going to visit Elvis, and somebody pulls out the guitars,
And there's like a, and you know, and I think it was like Lennon and Harrison, or maybe Lennon and Ringo. I don't think it was all four, but Elvis is there, and it's Elvis and the Beatles performing together. And of course, the punchline that everybody knows: no one thought to roll tape, no one thought to record it.
Is that right?
Same story about Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin went to visit Elvis at Graceland, and at one point, Robert Plant and Elvis start duetting, like in the middle of his living room, singing "Love Me Tender" together. Again, no one think you would think that it would be like the like the Nixon White House, where there would be microphones everywhere, just because you never know when that's going to happen. So are all of these great stories where rock stars over the years, like Elton John, told another one of going to sort of pay homage, where he would go and he would make his trek, his it was like going to Mecca, you know, to see Elvis at Graceland. How many people do they expect are going to line up for this?
Oh, it'll be thousands. And this year they're actually letting impersonators show up, as long as they're tastefully done.
Yeah, taste. Because nothing screams taste like Elvis Presley in his later years. Excellent. All right, my friend, enjoy the rest of your southern afternoon. The weather treating you okay down there?
It's going to be, it's about 100 degrees right now. I think it's going to get hotter. Probably be about 105.
Yeah, but it's a wet heat, so. All right.
Well, it's kind of like a dry heat in Vegas, you know?
Ed McCarthy, enjoy your day, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Ed McCarthy. All right. You know, it's so weird to think that this is a real laugh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we hear it every day.
I know, but you sort of forget that, like, that's a thing he just sort of did naturally. Like, he wasn't performing for the microphone. It's weird. It's like when you hear
Are
that.
Are you high?
I'm not.
So you're like, that's weird.
It is kind of weird. Okay, now listen, you damn woman. You know what else is weird? I don't have time to do this now. Well, I'll play it a little bit. Okay, you know what's weird? Is that? But here's the thing. You know what I was listening to the other day is the whole speech that came from, which I won't play the whole speech. Just play the end of it. Because
he's
know,
like, first we'll go to something, and we'll go to something.
Yeah, but you know the weird thing. Yeah, the weird thing about it is that scream. Even when you hear it in context and you know it's coming, that Dean scream, it sounds like it comes out of nowhere and it makes no sense. Because the rest of his voice is like a totally different register. It's all guttural. Because you're like, we're going to Oregon and California and Iowa. And it's like all the, he like shifts. It's like another voice just comes out of him. Listen to how, even knowing it's coming, the Dean scream sounds like a different person in a different voice, like from a different universe.
We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we go to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! See what I mean?
Oh, my God.
It hasn't lost any of its punch.
The one thing that he did that lost him any chance that he had.
I mean, it's just wonderful. And,
then we
hilarious.
Ruined it. I still feel the burden of ruining Howard Dean's chances.
My friend Simone just takes me to task for that because she's a big bleeding heart. And she's like, the media is so... The media...
We're solely responsible for that.
Oh, no, it's us. No, we totally ruined that guy.
You've got to play the whole thing again.
Okay. Wait, hold on.
We're going to California.
Oh, by the way, I should say... During the 48-hour film festival, which Aaron's superhero film screens tonight, by the way, and so did the group I was in with a bunch of Bigger Than Jesus alumni, the Patrick, Joni, Jarris, Nate, that screens tonight, too, the superhero film. So we both got superhero, and it was both played tonight at the Hollywood Theater. We had this whole goal to put the Dean scream into our movie, like the Wilhelm, and then we were going to merge them. We were going to make the Dean Helm, where it was like the Dean scream merged with the Wilhelm. Ended up not happening because it wouldn't have fit the film, but that was our goal. So
we're going to California and Texas and New York, and we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan, and then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House.
Yeah! That's wonderful. Oh, what could possibly top that?
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, I kiss you on the mouth. Please let me.
Good morning, Metolia.
Hello, Scotty J.
Well, good afternoon, Wanker's Corner.
Thank you. Hi, how are you doing?
Grand.
Scotty, will you please stop sending me crappy songs?
Oh, yeah, seriously, what is this Rod Stewart song you sent her?
Why don't you play it?
Okay, hold on. But give me the background before we play this, Scotty.
What? Yeah, I need some background.
I was skiing yesterday out on the Willamette, and I heard this song.
You were water skiing?
That's right.
On the Willamette? You let that water touch your skin?
It was kind of gross because I bit it big time, and I'm sure several gallons went down my throat.
Oh.
But
all right.
Ew,
I blew it out.
It's like being at Raymond Burr's house.
So much wrong stuff is in there.
It was wrong, but it was fun. And I heard this on the radio. I'm like, wow, that would be a great song to, you know.
I've listened to this Rod Stewart song. And I really...
Right, of course you
would
like it.
Please tell us what station.
No
I'm
way...
not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying, what in God's name makes you think that somebody listening to this show would like it?
That's the thing. So I haven't heard the song, but Scotty apparently sent this, and he's like, you've got to add this to the music library. And he cornered me about it in the live hallway, too. He said, I sent Sarah a Rod Stewart song. You've got to put it in the library so we can play it in the break. What station did you hear the song on?
You know, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
There's that music radio station marketing at work, by the way. You don't even remember the name of the station.
Nope.
It's hard to believe that music radio really isn't the dominant force that it once was.
Yeah, I think it was just a flipping and, oh, I like that one.
It's Rod Stewart. Was it KGON?
It's possible.
Sarah, do you have this song?
I do.
This is the song that Scotty wants us to add.
See,
to...
Yeah, I had context to this.
How would there be context if you said play it in or out of break?
There you go.
Scotty. Okay.
Into a break.
Okay, let's just... Scotty wants us to add... Because, you know, when we go into commercial break, we will play little snippets of song, which is a thing I took from Scott Farrell. So Scotty wants us to add this to our music library.
Yeah,
go ahead. Pretend you're going into a break. All right. Well,
all right,
this is, we're not really breaking, but let's pretend we are. Okay, Rick Emerson Show... back after... Previously at Miami Vice. Crockett, these drugs... Your alligator ate all my heroin, or whatever. Somebody somewhere. No. And you didn't hear this on KGON. I take it back. There's no way.
It's actually a cool song. It's just not
something you pick. Let's listen.
Let's let this song secret song. Running out of patience.
Now, the beginning is long like this, but I cut it down.
Where's the hook?
Coming up like in a few seconds. Or... You won't find any pity. It just kills you.
Out on the city, you won't find any pity.
Rod Stewart's cool. I don't care what you say. I like the guy.
Okay, well, let's hear. Let's just...
Let's get the hook.
Hold on. Boy, Pink Floyd deserves a royalty for that.
Totally.
I have a call for Mr. Floyd, for Mrs. Floyd.
The song is old, actually.
Uh-huh.
Very old.
It's not older than the song it's stolen from.
It's not older than the wall.
Is there a chorus in this somewhere?
Where's the hook?
It's right there. It's starting to... Right here.
There's been no chorus.
See it?
That's not a chorus.
That's pretty much how it is.
We're never playing this song.
Never on this show.
This isn't a chorus either.
Okay, here's what I thought. The melody, the tune, this, that, and whatnot, going into a break, it's just kind of, you know, on a sunny day. And I'm sure people will call in and agree with Scotty J on this one. That this is actually a pretty cool song. What do you think, Tim? You know this.
I agree, Scotty.
You know this song, right? Okay, I was... Out on the river, this song was playing.
Were you drunk?
I guess life was just great. I only had one beer.
Uh-huh.
I only had one.
And then I bit it big time and drank half the Willamette.
I thought you were never going to drink again.
Is this song something?
Well, it was only one beer.
Is this something Mrs. J is making you do to pay her back? Are you having to do this to placate your wife?
You better play me some Rod Stewart, or you.
Yeah, we're never playing
her
again. No, this is really.
She has nothing to do with it.
This is a terrible song.
To you, but to me, it's great.
We should do an Insta poll before Scotty can screen out the call.
Okay. We'll do an Insta poll right now, and then I have a question for you about this song, Scotty. And then we got a break. We got to come back. It's 503-733-2970. An Insta poll. Is this, in fact, the worst song ever recorded, or is it not?
And I have lots of good news for later today, too. So.
It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Should this song be added to the Rick Emerson song library? Also, Scotty, what is the lead instrument in this song?
You know, I think it's a synthesizer.
Yeah, that's how you know it's a bad song, when you're not even really sure what the lead instrument is.
Isn't it?
I don't know, is it?
That's wow. That's a synthesizer.
Yeah, that's the mark of a great song, by the way.
What am I thinking of?
Something better?
Is it The Young and the Restless that this sounds like?
Well, Young Hearts, Be Free Tonight is similar to this, and he sings that.
Oh, you're thinking of Summer Breeze by Seals and Cross.
Oh, yeah. How many songs is this song stolen from?
At least two. Let's take some calls. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, that no, that song is awful. That song, as well as Scotty J, should have been left floating down the Willamette.
Thank you.
Now, listen, Rick, we've talked about this before, and, you know, if the audience wants to turn on me for this comment, whatever.
All right. Hi. Okay, let's just take a call. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Should this song be added to the library?
Yeah, tell Sporbert there that this song should never be played again.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. The audience can be like sheep, Rick.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Should this song be added
to
the library?
You.
In the words of Bart Simpson, this song both sucks and blows.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Should this song be added to the library?
Scott DJ wants to play music that Rick wants to go away. No.
Thank you. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Instapoll. Should this song be added to the library? That really got to count as
now. Now, I got a question.
Can I read you the emails that Scotty's been, like, bombarding with, too? That's why you should play Passion. Tons of 40-plus older listeners.
There is. I get calls from people over 40 points. Daily.
Yeah, they all love this song, too. All of them. Uh-huh. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Should this song be added to the library? Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. Hi.
Hey. I think it should be. I really like this song. It's pretty sick.
There you go. Thank you. All right. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Should this song be added to the library?
No.
Thank you. I think it's just short to the point. Thank you. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. We'll do two more. Hi, should this song be added to the library?
Yes, but if you put that in, you must put in Air Supply's Lost in Love.
Okay. I'm all for that. Hi, final call. Rick Emerson Show. Should this song be added to the library?
I'm a huge Scotty J fan. Even though the song is really dumb, I think we should probably add.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Well, unfortunately, that's not enough to swing the... Thank you. Well done. Not enough to swing the vote. That's not going to be added now or ever.
Okay. But uh-huh. We did
I
play it.
I love this song.
We did play it. So.
Add this to the library.
There's a hipper version of this that they played for a Target commercial.
Version? There's a hipper version of this Seals and Crofts
yeah.
tune.
The one that,
there's a better song called I'll Play For You, which is much better.
Ooh,
than
I like that song. But
yeah,
as far as Summer Breeze goes, they have a Target commercial
Kill
version.
Me.
So
this reminds me of riding the back of my parents' station wagon when I was like
Kill me
five.
Now. This is a weird song.
You've heard the new version. It was for Gap or Target.
Well, there's like a metal version of this. There's this band Typo Negative that did a metal version that's actually kind of cool. All right. Oh, I'm falling asleep. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Scotty.
It's a music everyone can agree on in the office.
Uh-huh. If you work at the Department of Motor Vehicles. All right, well, take a break. We come back. Tim Riley, have ye news for us?
Oh, yes, and plenty of breaking stories, too.
Fantastic. Plus, we'll chat with Mr. Skin. We're going to answer that Catherine Bell question about whether she's ever nude it up. Catherine Bell, formerly of JAG, now of Navy Wives. Tim Riley, Mr. Skin, top five coming up. Kissology Volume 2, Jim Roop. It's all on the way. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Do we not get the? Do we get the ringtone at the end of this one? Is this live?
Damn it! I thought it was in this one. Never mind. I'm watching. It's off of the wall.
Oh, that's so cool.
I love this movie.
You were just noting that we were really born at the wrong time. Born too late. You know, for Kiss, Alice Cooper, all the bands that I love, I missed them at their prime. You know, I'll never. I was talking about that Wall concert, which was only done, I think, you know, at that time in three cities. I think it was done in London, New York, and L.A. I think that's it. Because it was just so huge, too impossible to stage. Real life helicopters flying in, massive, those Gerald Scarfe puppets that were like 10 stories high. And then, so there was that one scene, and then we'll talk to Mr. Skin here in just a moment, then we'll go to Tim Riley with the news. There was that one scene, though, where there's the giant wife puppet hitting the school teacher puppet, which is in turn hitting the puppet of the boy. And that's all done live in front of you. Over the course...
That is just depressing.
I know, and I mean... And
I was just even watching, like, the little, you know, shoddy video footage on YouTube.
If you ever want to be...
And seeing helicopters fly over the audience as they start that... Oh.
If you want to be stunned, I'll lend you my documentary about the making of the... Doing the wall, the concert. And then over the course of the show, they would build, literally, build this huge wall out of bricks And then by the end, when he does Goodbye, Cruel World, he goes, goodbye. And he puts the final brick in, and the entire band is sealed off from the audience. And then at the end, and then they play the rest of it with the wall up. And then at the end, but they're projecting the animations on the wall.
Okay, during the trial?
Yeah, and then at the end, bam, they blow the wall up on stage. I mean, it's just badass.
That really depresses me.
Yeah. I mean, my wife really nailed it when she said that for a guy who hated his audience, he sure gave them a whole lot. You know what I mean? All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from MrSkin.com, the online celebrity nudity database, our good friend Mr. Skin. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
Things are going well, my friend. And I actually, I have a question for you. And it's funny because this came up, I think, last week, about an hour after we talked to you.
Okay.
And it has been plaguing the audience ever since then. We have a question about Catherine Bell, who was on JAG and who I guess now is on Navy Wives.
Oh, yeah. Huge fan of hers.
Yeah. So, because she was on Jimmy Kimmel last week, and she was sitting next to Kimmel, and, I mean, I hadn't seen her for a while, but goddamn, she is just scorching. And so the question was, has Catherine Bell ever done nudity?
Yes, and it's very good nudity. There's two things. One is remember the old Dream on HBO with Martin Tupper?
I do indeed.
She was on an episode of that when she was an unknown actress, and she showed her breasts, and it's really amazing. She also did an old show that used to be on Cinemax in the mid-90s called Hotline. It was very much like Red Shoe Diaries.
Right.
And she did an episode on there, again, very naked. But one of the coolest things she ever did was the movie Death Becomes Her with Meryl Streep and Isabella Rossellini Goldie Hawn. And there's a scene where Isabella Rossellini was supposed to get out of the pool naked about an hour and 20 minutes in. And at the time, they decided to use a body double. Well, the then unknown Catherine Bell was a body double at the time. She was so low on the actress totem pole, she was a body double. So the nude scene that's supposed to be Isabella Rossellini is actually Catherine Bell walking completely naked around the pool.
Excellent.
And it's a pretty cool bit of information. So the answer is great nudity from Catherine Bell and her.
Very cool. The audience has been wanting that information. So you just made a whole lot of people very happy. Fantastic.
good.
What else is going on this week?
Well, I also wanted to let you know this weekend Superbad is nude in theaters. This is from the creators of Knocked Up, which obviously Knocked Up did very well. It's getting great reviews, Superbad is. And there is nudity. 9 minutes in, they have real-life porn stars Jenna Hayes and Aurora Snow.
I love Jenna
topless.
Hayes. I don't know who that is. I love Jenna Hayes. She's beautiful, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she is. So they're naked. So there is nudity in Knocked Up, and it's a funny movie. And as far as new release DVDs this week, there's a movie called Getting It, which is a straight-to-DVD movie, which I normally wouldn't talk about because none of the actresses in these straight-to-DVD softcore, you know, movies are any name recognition. But one of the girls who's naked in this is Jessica Canseco, the ex-wife of baseball great Jose Canseco. So she's naked quite a few times. She used to be a Hooters girl, and Hooters are on display many times in Getting It, which is a new release DVD this week.
Excellent. Fantastic. Yes. All right, my friend. Well, thank you for answering the Catherine Bell question in addition to all that other great stuff. The website is MrSkin.com, the online celebrity nudity database. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Same with me. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you. There you go. Mr. Skin, ladies and gentlemen. Excellent. All right. Fantastic. All right. I don't even want to talk about this now because it's going to sidetrack the entire show.
Yeah, why were you
show.
All freaking out?
He said something that flipped a switch in my head, that it was something I had written down last night, and my wife just saw me go bat-ass about this last night. There was a little piece of news that came out last night that I'm not going to say now, and I don't mean to be teasing about this, but we got to do the news. Remind me to tell you something later. It's just going to fry your brain, Sarah, when I tell you this. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
There's been a deadly crash at Estacada. This is at Southeast Coupland Road, about a mile east of Estacada High School. Flight has been called in. At least one of the vehicles is on fire.
Okay.
The fugitive former director of the defunct Islamic Charity of Portland was arrested by the feds when he arrived in Oregon to face tax and money laundering charges. Under arrest is Pete Seda. He faces conspiracy, money laundering, and tax fraud charges, claiming he helped smuggle $150,000 out of the U.S. to Saudi Arabia. Our good friends there. to the charity, then filed a false tax return to cover it up. It's believed that Sater spent at least a few years in his native Iran.
I don't like the sound of that.
Well, emergency workers and grieving relatives uncovered dozens of bodies in the wreckage in northwest Iraq today. 250 people were killed in blasts. The U.S. general who runs this thing says it's considered an act of ethnic cleansing. Gee, that's funny. That's what they were saying was going to happen if we left Iraq. And here we are, and it's already going on.
That's hard to believe. And also, the phrase ethnic cleansing really bothers me. Who created that phrase? Was it America? Well, I mean, I don't know what he called it, actually. But, I mean, was that an American phrase? Is it? Are we the ones who decided not to call it, you know, just killing?
Yeah.
Genocide?
Mm-hmm. I hate that phrase. Ethnic cleansing just sounds awful.
Well, the phrase ethnic cleansing,
well, that's
what
this General Petraeus said.
I don't want to be like, it's not like I'm America's moral conscience or something.
But you're getting there.
But, yes. Slowly but surely. It's not like I'm some sort of the moral compass for this country. But, A, ethnic cleansing, it downplays the horror of the event, right? It's not, you're not cleansing anything. I mean, it's genocide. That's what it is. Ethnic cleansing is not cleaning anything. You're just killing a whole bunch of people because you don't like where they live, what they look like, what color their skin is, who they pray to, what village they live in. It's not ethnic cleansing. That's just genocide. So if we're the ones who made that term up, we ought to knock that crap off. Secondly, using the phrase ethnic cleansing lends some sort of credence to the idea that there was something in that ethnicity that needed to be cleaned. I mean, it just bugs me. You know what I mean? It's not that it even really affects me. I'm just saying linguistically, it just horrifies me. It horrifies me for the same reason. Never mind. I'm not gonna get off the sidetrack any further. It's just a stupid and offensive phrase. It just irritates me like nobody's business. All right.
So there. General Petraeus says, be prepared for his recommendations on troop cuts that are coming very soon. He said the U.S. will have a good smaller part in Iraq coming soon.
All right.
Meanwhile, White House spokeslady Dana Perino says terrorists have no heart.
And what they are trying to do is break our will and the will of the Iraqi people. But it has the opposite effect. And we are determined more than ever to stand with the Iraqis and support them as they work to protect their young democracy from being attacked by a determined enemy.
Wait a minute. Isn't this determined enemy the Iraqis themselves?
Seriously,
who are the Iraqi people
now,
as opposed to the people instigating these
attacks? I don't even know. The dead enders, Tim.
Oh,
all right.
Let's see. This violence is uncalled for.
We join with the Iraqis who are grieving after yesterday's horrific suicide bombings. We condemn the barbaric attacks on the innocent Iraqi citizens who lost their lives and for the hundreds who were wounded.
So stop it.
Okay.
She said, did she say something else? Yes, she did.
It's difficult for those of us who live in peace and freedom to understand what possesses people to take a suicide truck bomb and blow it up in the middle of a highly populated area. This is an enemy that has no heart. They have no conscience.
I've lost track of who we're even talking about now.
The terrible people in Iraq.
Okay.
Picking on the Iraqi peoples.
All right. Okay. Fantastic.
Speaking of ethnic cleansing, the Chinese are attempting to do that to America's young people. Now, certain vinyl baby bibs sold at Toys R Us are contaminated with lead. These are vinyl bibs. And
those Chinese are crafty. Is there anything they can't make out of lead?
Well, listen to this. Apparently, they feature pictures of Disney's Winnie the Pooh characters on them. And these are killer bibs.
Damn, why is my humor failing me at this moment? But, you know, the thing about the Chinese are sort of reverse alchemists. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the whole, you know, trying to turn lead into gold, and they just turn lead into children's toys and toothpaste. Well done, Chinese.
So now
we salute you.
19 million toys sent from China with hate are being recalled. All made by the quality people at Mattel.
Okay. Sure.
Let's see.
Whatever.
Most of these are die-cast toy cars depicted in the character Sarge from the animated film Cars, and they're covered with lead paint.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Bill Reese, who runs Really Cool Toys in Sacramento, says he has plenty of these toys on his shelves. Come and get them.
I'd like to see more toys made in America. You know, they cost more. I think people would be willing to spend that, knowing they got a better product.
Wait, what? Huh?
It's Bill Reese of Really Cool Toys.
Oh, I see.
He has plenty of these lead-covered toys in his toy store.
All right.
Pediatrician Ravinda Kariya says lead paint can cause health problems, including mental retardation in children. And these magnets swallowed can cause intestinal blockages. Why, these kids can even choke to death.
If a child actually gets a hold of that material and starts ingesting it, it does have a certain sweet taste to it. Uh-huh. So it'll continue to do it.
So it's not, so it's not just lead. It's delicious candy-flavored lead.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. I mean, I really don't know what to say beyond that, except to say that two things. A, I know that when my father, I know this was a generational thing maybe, or maybe they were just stupid. When my father was growing up, I know that he had, in my grandfather's workshop downstairs, my grandfather had like a big, you know, like a shop down there where he would do carpentry and metalworking and whatever. And I know that like a lot of the toys that my dad played with when he was a kid were made out of lead.
Yeah.
I've seen some of that, like toy soldiers and like little, not the, you know, like he didn't have action figures or whatever, but he had like toy soldiers and toy cars or whatever made out of lead. Like my grandfather would go into the basement, boil up a bunch of lead, pour it into a mold, and like, you know, my dad would be like, what's that? I've made you a toy, son. And, like, hand my dad a toy made out of solid lead. That actually explains a lot now that I think about it. There really is just a whole lot that's explained by that. B, the other thing this reminds me of is my idiot brother-in-law, who, as a child, God, so much of my family can be explained by the introduction of heavy metals into their bloodstream. My idiot brother-in-law, who, as a child, the toy that he was given to play with was, I swear to Christ, a coffee can with mercury in it. Just a coffee can with just like a bunch of like mercury that is like in the, like in a thermostat, or not a thermostat, a thermometer, which, you know, is interesting because it'll roll around and it's quicksilver and it whatever. And then it also, what's that? Oh, yeah, soaks into your skin and poisons your brain. So there's a whole sections of my family, you know, where they've just taken and just injected things from the periodic table of the elements right into their brains. So, all right, well, there you go. All right, here's Tim Riley. Let's do one more. And unfortunately, what we'll do is we'll have to do one more. Then we'll have to break, and we'll come back and we'll do the Kiss contest at the top of the hour.
Well, after being convicted of driving while impaired earlier this year, George Michael has started his sentence of 100 hours of community service. He stayed clear of bathroom duty and helped out in the garden of a London hostel for the homeless. This isn't the 44-year-old's first stint doing court-ordered volunteer work. Back in 1998, he served 80 hours of community service after being arrested in that Beverly Hills public toilet.
Fantastic. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Take a break here. We'll come back. We will do the Kiss contest for a copy of Kissology Volume 2, 1978 to 1991. What else? Oh, our search for the second worst story ever. Scotty claims he has good news for us about something or other. Speaking of news, Tim Riley will return with more news, and I've got something that will bake Sarah Dillon's brain. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Tap! And then I got to tell you this news.
Yeah,
you
want to
know it now?
Yeah.
Okay. I got to tell you this news. Then we got to do the Kiss contest. Then Roop. Then Hunt for the second worst story. Then Tim.
Okay.
All right. So, you know what's his name? Michael Cera.
Yes.
I think I'm pronouncing that
George
right.
Michael.
George Michael Bluth. Also, he's in that new movie Superbad, which is apparently fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to have your noodle baked?
Okay.
Michael Cera has apparently signed on to portray He apparently has signed on, in a filmic sense, to portray Nick Twisp. That's what I'm saying. I can't even think about it, because it's like looking at the sun. That's what I'm saying right there. I don't even know how to feel it.
It's
literally
beautiful.
Literally, when I saw that news last night, I did exactly what you did. I was on Ain't It Cool, and I went,
And I knew
from the headline. You know what the headline says? It says, Michael Cera will soon be a youth in revolt. And I went, you know, and my wife, she's like, what are you doing? And I said, and I couldn't even speak. I didn't even know how to talk. And she said, what? And I said, and I did the same thing. I said, and I was just kind of not even able really to talk. Just sort of guttural vowel sounds coming out of me. And she said, what is it? And I said, and I did exactly the same setup. I said, Michael Cera has been cast to play Nick Twisp. And she just went, oh, my God. And then we had this moment of, like, conversational airlock between us where we couldn't even talk. And I even now, I can't even really think about it. They've got a writer that I've never heard of, but no director set. And it's like, I can't. Let me just do a little backup, because now Sarah and I are off in our own world, and everybody else is wondering what the hell we're talking about.
Oh, my gosh. It's the greatest book ever.
Youth and Revolt, which is a novel by C.D. Payne. And I can't remember if I've had him on the program or not. I know that sounds stupid, but I can't remember if I interviewed him or if I just... I shared email correspondence with him, and then he sent me a great autographed first edition of Youth and Revolt, which is one of my prized possessions.
Sarah's a huge fan of the book. I have a copy signed by C.D. Payne. It's my most prized possession.
He actually, Sarah had said at one point, this actor Michael Cera had said at one point, that Nick Twist was his dream role. And again, I don't think I ever had C.D. Payne on the program, but we did. We pushed a couple of his books. We talked about Frisco Pigeon Mambo and Civic Beauties, which were not all that great. But he sent me a signed copy of the Youth and Revolt first edition because I had plugged his books so heavily. Youth and Revolt came out in, I think, 94. It is a novel by C.D. Payne, P-A-Y-N-E. And I would say to you this, that... It is. I always talk about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And that is sort of the greatest only because I read it as an adolescent. And books you read as an adolescent really stay with you, whether it's Catcher in the Rye, whether it's, whether it's To Kill a Mockingbird, whatever. But I would say really all things being equal, on an even playing field, if you take out the fact that I read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest when I was 13, Youth in Revolt by C.D. Payne is hands down, period, the greatest book I have ever read. I mean, it is...
It is an amazing book. I've read it. I've lost countless copies of it because I've shoved it on people along with Girlfriend in a Coma.
Totally. And you know that I've told this story a jillion times. You know that for several years in a row, it was what I gave everybody for Christmas. In fact, I would have people go, you already gave me this book last year, to be like, then give it to someone else. Pass it on. It's Spielberg had optioned it at one point to make a movie out of it. Didn't happen. They talked about making an HBO series out of it, which I was sort of excited about. Then that didn't happen. And then I was just, you know, and then I sort of forgot about it because I'm like, you know, it can never be. It seemed like one of those books that they could never do justice to ever, which they still might not be able to.
All right, so I'm reading about this writer, and he seems pretty promising. He's only written a couple other movies. He has one coming out in November. His name's Justin Nash. And the early reviews, it played at Tribeca, and the early reviews were 9 out of 10 stars.
Of his last film. So I had sort of forgotten about the idea of Youth and Revolt ever being made into a movie just because I sort of assumed it would never happen. It seemed like one of those books, like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, that was going to be impossible to adapt. And, you know, who would you ever get to play Nick Twist, who is one of the greatest, I mean... Really, and I hate to be an instigator, but he just kicks the holy living ass out of Holden Caulfield as a teenage protagonist. There's just no getting around that. He is, in my opinion, the greatest teen protagonist that I have ever read, ever, in a book. I mean, the problem with Youth and Revolt is it is such a towering masterwork that the guy who wrote it, C.D. Payne, he'll never top it, and I think he knows that. He's gone back to the well a couple times. He's written some sort of sequel books that aren't very good that I would kind of encourage you not to read because they can't hold a candle to the original. But when I read this story last night, and again, I just saw the headline, where it said Michael Cera will be a Youth in Revolt, and it's like literally, you hear this phrase a lot, and when people say it, they don't usually mean it, but it took my breath away. I made exactly the noise that you made today. I just kind of went, and I just, I meant to do a whole section today, actually, called Book Talk. I even had a little thing set aside here.
Jeez, you really did.
I was going to do a whole thing called It's Book Talk with Rick and Sarah on AM 970. And I was going to ask you...
You're right. My head cannot wrap around it.
That's what I'm saying. The idea of that book being successfully turned into a film, or the idea of Nick Twist, and he is Nick Twist. He is the guy. He is the guy to play that role.
But in everything, Michael... It seems like Michael Cera has a lot to do with the roles that he plays. I think that...
Here's the thing. And I'm not going to say this, because... Well, I am going to say it, but I'm not... I mean, I'm just going to say passingly... And then we should probably move on, because Sarah and I are just going to gibber each other into a frenzy about a book that few people have read. Sadly, it is a very...
We can get to another argument about...
we talked about Corey Feldman. It's the definition of a cult book, but I will say this. If only... Because the thing about Youth and Revolt, if you know it is, it's... And by the way, I should clarify...
If Evan Rachel Wood stars as the girl, I swear I'm not watching it.
Well, let me just say this, and then we're going to move on, because I know people think it's dull that we're talking about a book. Let me just say this. before you start thinking that we're talking about some highbrow work of Western literature, let me tell you this. Here's what Youth in Revolt is about. It is set in modern times. It is set in Ukiah, California, and surrounding territories. In modern times, Nick Twisp is a perpetually horny, hyper-intelligent 14-year-old living with a really white trash family who meets, falls in love with, and then pursues a really beautiful, intelligent teenage girl named Sheenie Saunders. And he just lives with this, and he has a horrible, jobless, alcoholic dad and a deadbeat mom, and it is impossible to overstate the greatness of Youth in Revolt by C.D. Payne. Really, seriously. And I hate to say a cliche, but if you read one book this year, you got to read that. It is so good.
It's
unbelievably good. But I hate to say this, because the book is so dark, because Nick is just such a bad person in so many ways. So you've got to make sure they leave that in. They can't nice it up. They can't have him hugging his dad at the end and going, "Dad, I learned that I love you." Because that would be wrong.
It's total destruction and awkwardness.
Total. It's just everything goes bad. If only Judd Apatow could somehow become attached to this. And you know what? Not even to direct, but maybe even just to oversee it to make sure that they didn't F it up. You know? And if Superbad really performs, Apatow might decide that Sarah's one of his boys that he's going to hang on to. And you might be able to get Apatow attached to this movie as like a producer. Just to make sure that it's not effed up and turned to crap. So, that's it. Hey, that's... how do you feel about... sadly,
let's do it.
How do you feel about blowing off Jim Roop today?
Yeah,
I hate to use the phrase blowing off, Scotty, but we're not going to be able to do that justice. So, Scotty, when we hear from Roop, can you apologize to him, give him my profound apologies, tell him that it is my fault, Rick Emerson, ran too late, and, we will not be able to get to him. Yeah, thank you. Roop, out. Thank you. All right. Okay, are you done? By the way, speaking of Rick Emerson's book hour, you got to bring...
Okay, just really quick, have they announced anybody else who's in the cast?
No.
Better not be Evan Rachel.
No,
Wood.
See, I'm not even going to think about it. You got to bring me that.
I have a feeling.
You got to bring me Survivor.
You know what? I lent it. It's once again. It's gone.
Oh really?
I lent it to somebody. Right. I looked for it all morning.
I had one other book story that I had. One other is the book. Rick Emerson's book talk was going to be three parts today: Youth in Revolt, me asking you if you had Chuck Palahniuk's Survivor for me, and then me talking about this this other book. But I think I have to wait at this point because that's just.
Is it a book that I've read?
No. It's just going to be it's going to be a recommendation for the people. But you know what? I'm gonna do it another time, because I want today to be all about Youth and Revolt. Today, my sole recommendation is that you buy and read Youth and Revolt. So, in fact, I'll tell you this. Really? Honestly? I'm going to say this flat out. So, if you buy Youth and Revolt and don't like it, and this is only good for the first three people, if you buy Youth and Revolt and don't like it, I will buy it from you.
And then can you give it to me because I lent out my copy?
No, seriously. And that is good for the first three people only. Don't be a dick. Don't be a jerk and buy it and then return it. You know, give it to me just so you can get like $12 from me. But I'm saying honestly, if you buy Youth and Revolt, read it all the way through and you don't like it, first three people don't like it, I'll buy it from your ass. So that's how good Youth and Revolt is. Let's just get a couple of these Youth and Revolt calls. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hello, Rick.
Hey.
So here's the deal. I love this freaking book. It is unbelievable. I'm not a reader. I'm not a big reader, but this book is unbelievable.
It is. It's one of those books that when you read it, you cannot believe it wasn't the biggest hit of the year.
It is the funniest thing I've ever read.
Yeah.
I loved it so much that actually my band, our first CD, there's a part in the beginning of the book where Nick Twisp is reading this book in middle school by C.C. Pennypacker called How I Made $1 Million in High School and Got Accepted by Yale.
Right.
And that is the name of our debut album.
Oh, that is so great. What is the name of your band, sir?
Nickel Arcade.
Nickel Arcade. Oh, you're on my the MySpace.
Well, aren't we always, though?
Yes, I think so. That is fantastic. Always good to hear from a fellow fan of Youth and Revolt. Did you watch Arrested Development ever?
I did, yeah.
So you know Michael Cera.
Yeah, definitely.
How great would that guy be as Nick Twisp?
I got to tell you, I just had lunch with my grandpa, and I got in the car, and I turned this on, and I couldn't handle it. I'm so freaking excited.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Everybody has had that reaction. My wife, Sarah, you, me, we're all like, just can't even believe it.
I totally agree, though. If somehow Judd Apatow could become attached to this, I think that I would get a big T.E.
Yeah, good reference. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, goodbye.
All right, God bless you.
Oh,
just,
that's awesome.
Just to protect it. Just to protect it from the Hollywoodizing that might happen. You know, where they cast Evan Rachel Wood and where it ends with the mom and the dad getting back together.
Oh,
and then I'd have to kill everyone involved with it.
I hope it has all the awkwardness and the acne and the...
Totally.
You know,
it is...
The shower scene.
He is sort of an exaggerated version of what it is really like to be an adolescent. You know what I mean? In that he's hyper-intelligent, and he sort of gets into these escapades that are sort of like way, way, you know, they're very sort of cloak and dagger sometimes. But, I mean, he's miserable, ugly, covered in zits, has no money, broken home, alcoholic dad, no car. I mean, it really is an exaggerated technicolor version of real adolescence. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick, this is Alexander.
What's up?
Hey, I heard you mention the fact that this book is based in Ukiah, California.
Well, Sheeny lives in Ukiah, California. It takes place all over California, but yeah, Sheeny is from there.
That's you kind of took me back. I grew up right in that area, right around there.
Uh huh.
And like, if it has actual references to like points of interest around there, like the Ukiah Haiku Festival, because Ukiah is haiku backwards.
Right. Right.
And you know, things like that. That sounds like a really good book.
C.D. Payne, the author, lives in San Francisco. He lives in the Bay Area, and it is all set in California. Lots of it's set in the Bay Area. Lots of references to taking BART to get places and so forth.
Right.
So it's I cannot recommend it strongly enough.
You know, I always love books where they are set in a specific real place.
Yep.
And then they reference like books that reference Powell's, you know,
yeah,
based here in Portland. Things like that. I always find that to be really cool because you can kind of go, oh, yeah, connect to it.
And it's, you know, and you can, and even not really knowing much about the Bay Area, you can tell. I mean, I can tell that it's written with an author's eye for detail. Yeah.
Right.
Excellent.
And Matt, now you said this is from the mid-90s?
It came out in 94. It's set in contemporary time. You read it now, there's one or two things, like in terms of his computer that he has, his PC, that are kind of dated. But it is
right.
It is set in the mid-90s, yeah.
Okay, well, cool. I'm definitely going to pick up a copy.
It really is. Seriously, you buy it, you don't like it, I'll buy it from you.
Sounds good.
Thank you, sir.
Recommendation.
All right, if you like it, pass it on. Okay, there you go, Alexander. I'm all giddy. Now my heart's just pounding. All right. Now we got to do the kiss contest. I guess I should.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
Well, let me do this call and we'll clear out the phones. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Good day to you.
Hello, sir.
I was listening to you and you said, what could be better than the Howard Dean?
Yes.
Scream.
Yeah.
I have sent you some songs that I got off of those interwebs there, of songs remixed with Howard Dean screaming.
Oh, yeah. Is this like, because somebody sent me one of like, it was like Hell's Bells or AC/DC or something, and instead of the Hell's Bells, it was like, Bells.
Yeah, I've got Crazy Train coming your way.
Excellent.
And some others. And this afternoon, because I felt so bad for Tim over the last couple of months, I dropped off a good VHS copy of... Independence Day at the front.
Oh, is that you who did that?
I did that. Yeah, I picked up the Kiss anthology that I got yesterday from you guys and thought that I'd
give
back some love to Tim.
He was very happy about that. No,
yeah.
he was very happy about that.
Fantastic.
Excellent. Thank you, my friend, and thank you for the Howard Dean.
I'll close out with, Greg would say.
Bye now. All right. Good Greg, sir. That's Greg, not Greg. That is Greg from The Last Starfighter. That we played at the top of the show.
Uh-huh.
I love you, Alex Rogan. All right. It's not me saying that. That's Maggie saying that.
Creepy.
Or Mags, as he called her. All right. Can we do the kiss thing now?
We sure can.
Hey.
And then we got a break.
Hey, you crazy kids. Hey, you crazy kids. These are all with K's. It's time to commence the kiss contest. Call. 503-733-2970. We'll take caller 5 right now. I don't think anybody else has been cast. I think it's just Michael Cera and that guy. It's 503-733-2970. We're going to do a giveaway right now. We will give away a copy of Kissology Volume 2. VH1 Classic Records announces the second installment of the number one smash Kissology DVD series in stores now. Kissology Volume 2, 1978-1991, including never-before-seen European versions of the rare cult classic film Kiss in Attack of the Phantoms, which I think is the European title of Phantom of the Park. Let's see, including 7 hours of rare to never-before-seen footage featuring notorious television interviews and early Kiss music videos. Volume 2 follows Kiss from the height of mid-70s Kiss-steria to the departure of Peter and Ace, the Kiss unmasking, and the Eric Carr years. Kissology, Volume 2, 1978 to 1991, available in stores now from VH1 Classic. There you go. We'll take caller five here. We're just, you know, let's just kill a little time with these.
Can we talk more about books?
Yes, I don't have anything else to say because I'm saving my other recommendation until tomorrow because it's a...
Do you know, have I read your other recommendation?
What's that?
Have I read your other recommendation?
No. No, you haven't. I read it last week, and my wife actually... I'm not going to say she's sick of me talking about it.
The Bronx Was Burning, is it again?
No, I'm done with that. I've been on a real reading jag. I read Into Thin Air, Into the Wild, The Bronx Is Burning. The reason I'm going to hold off on this other book is because, A, I really wanted to just today get people to go buy Youth and Revolt. And plus, this other book, which I am glad that I read the Youth and Revolt story because it flushed this other book out of my head. I read, and I know this sounds like a tease. I'm going to say this, and then we'll go to these calls. I was at Aaron's last night, and my wife walked out of the bathroom, and she heard me talking to Aaron about this book. And she's like, oh, God, are you talking about that book again? My wife had to suffer through me reading this book last week. It is the most disturbing, unsettling thing I've ever read. And that's why I'm not going to talk about life, because it's a world apart from Youth and Revolt, which is hilarious. Youth and Revolt is, as they say, it is lol, funny. It's laugh out loud funny. I read this other book, though, that is, it's one of those books that you just want to finish because then you want to wipe it out of your brain because it just is tainting your soul with every page. Like, you can just feel bits of your soul being blackened and fluttering away. It's a great book. Probably the most powerful, haunting book that I've read. But it's so different than Youth and Revolt, I'm not going to talk about it today. I'll wait until tomorrow. Today, it's all about buying Youth and Revolt by C.D. Payne. All right. Scotty, am I taking these calls? Scotty, okay, what am I doing? He's just typing don't. So, one? Line one, is that what I'm taking? Oh, I see. No, don't take the other lines. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, what is your name, sir?
This is Doug.
Doug, are you a Kiss fan?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. All right,
yeah,
Doug.
Yeah.
At stake here, we have a copy of Kissology Volume 2, 1978 to 1991. Are you prepared to play for that, sir?
Yes, indeed.
All right, but just by the way, somebody may be asking themselves why they would possibly want to win this. For what reason they could possibly be interested in this? Let's find out why.
Well, because I have Volume 1.
Oh, no. That's not enough, sir.
Hey, this is Gene Simmons.
Oh, that's not even the right thing. Wait, this is why you'd want to win it, sir.
Hey, this is Gene Simmons.
And this is Paul Stanley from KISS. Since you live in Portland, you might just have a snobby, elitist, hipster dimwit living next door. Well, take my advice. Get a copy of Kissology Volume 2, turn your system up loud, and play it day and night until his head explodes. Remember, KISS and you will outlast that guy every time. For more information, go to 970.am. And thanks for listening to AM 970 Solid State Radio.
That's fantastic. All right, so, sir, you have your choice now. You may either play Complete That KISS Lyric, or you can answer a KISS trivia question. What is your choice?
Complete the lyric.
Okay, sir. I will perform for you some KISS lyrics. I will then stop. You must then, you don't have to sing it. You can say it if you want. You must then give me the following line, all right?
Okay, so I pretend like I'm standing next to Joey Fatone.
Yes, that's exactly. That's exactly what Joey Fatone. That's exactly what you do. All right. Here is the lyric, sir. I will stop. Give me the next line. Don't let them tell you that there's too much noise. They're too old to really understand. You'll still get rowdy with the girls and boys.
It's time for you to make a stand.
Excellent. Shout it out loud. Yes.
Loud.
Congratulations, sir. You want a copy of Kissology Volume 2 in stores now. Kissology Volume 2, 1978 to 1991 from VH1 Classic Records. Congratulations, my friend.
Can I shout out to my friend Dean?
Yes.
In your face.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Oh, yeah. All right. Scotty, can you get his info?
Thank you.
Best audience ever. Let's break. Hey, we're on time.
I know. It's
look at that. In your face, Dean.
So that guy who called from Nickel Arcade?
Yeah.
I was listening to their band. They are amazing.
I was going to say, do they suck?
Oh, my God.
Because if they suck, that would be bad.
I'm going to play one of their songs going to break.
Let's hope it's
so
filled
good.
With profanity.
It's not. I listened to it.
Right. Excellent. What was that guy's name again? Peter? Peter.
I think so.
Yeah, his name is Peter. Oh, I like this already.
You'll love this song. Little to go for chicken.
Wanna see my body ache? Wanna know what it's gonna take? I say.
South Gerard Way.
Totally. All right. Back after this. We were just looking at the Nickel Arcade site during the break, and they're all about 12 years old, by the way, so...
And it kind of makes you want to kill yourself.
Yes, it does. I'm like three times their age. Here I am. Here I am in a room with Scotty most of the time. Fantastic. Hooray for me. 503, or maybe I'm just old and they look like they're 12. You know, I have noticed that happening to me as I get older. When I see younger people, people younger than myself, and I'm like, what are those kids? 15, 16, 25? You know, and I've just become so old that everyone in their 20s looks like a teenager to me. It's 503-733-2970. You may be asking yourself, what's happening next on this radio program? We're going to go to Tim Riley here in a second. Hey, by the way, who wants to hear an embarrassing interview pitch?
I do.
Somebody who's written a book called Grandparents Rock.
Oh, no.
A Grandparenting Guide.
Oh, no. No, no.
A Grandparenting Guide for the Rock and Roll Generation. 10 features 10 rockin' tips on how to help your grandchildren be happy. How about find them some different grandparents who aren't embarrassed of being old? All right, we got Tim Riley coming up. Then we'll talk. Scotty J claims he has great news for us today. Sort of Professor Farnsworth.
And I might have news for us, too. I'm waiting to hear back. About the thing we talked about earlier.
No, I don't even know what we're talking
potential guest.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Boy, can I just tell you, there's so many potential guests lurking out there right now, people don't even know. They would be agog if they
all have to wait their turn.
That's right. What does that mean?
Well, there's a long waiting list to get in here.
That is true. No, because we're immensely popular.
Mm-hmm. This is awkward.
Yeah, I don't know what we're doing here. Here's Tim.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Keep your political views to yourself. That's a message delivered to workers at the Seattle Times after some staff members publicly cheered the news of Karl Rove's resignation in the newsroom.
Oh, that's awkward.
Mm-hmm. The executive director, Dave Boardman, said after what he called an awkward moment at a news meeting, he told staffers, quote, that sort of expression is simply not appropriate for the newsroom. As we head into a major political year, now is a good time to remember, please keep your personal politics to yourself.
Please cling to the thin veneer of unbiased journalism that no one really believes you have anyway.
Meanwhile, John Edwards is moving staff out of Nevada to focus on other states. Mitt Romney,
you know that story we had for Edwards, not a Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Mitt Romney saying Democrats have been making comments recently that play into the hands of this country's enemies.
I don't believe for a minute these guys really think some of the things they're saying. I think they hope they're appealing to the far left wing of their party, but I don't think it's going
to
work.
Now you have to send your sons in to correct that. A new poll shows Hillary Clinton ahead of Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
She edges ahead of Rudy Giuliani in the National Quinnipiac University presidential poll, but the Hillary hostility factor is still there, and it has to feed those doubts about whether she can win in November.
Who's more likable?
People who like her a lot, and people who don't like her a lot. She carries positive numbers overall, but some negatives baggage that doesn't seem to disappear.
Well, seriously, is this guy getting paid for this analysis?
Yes.
The people who like her. The people who don't,
where do you get a job like that?
They don't like, seriously.
We do this stuff for nothing, and they're getting paid big bucks.
Scotty, we need to wet our beaks a little bit. Get us some speaking engagements so we can talk about people who like things and people who think stuff sucks.
Yeah, our beaks are too dry.
Yeah. Yes. My spoon is too big. Scotty wants to know that he wet his beak yesterday.
Well, that's good.
I don't even know what it means, but it's revolting.
That is so gross.
That's disgusting.
Oh, sounds wrong.
He wet his beak in the Willamette. That's even worse.
Yeah.
That's one place you don't want your beak to be.
Poop and bodies.
Scotty's beak is full of poop. Here's Tim Riley.
The crew of the Space Shuttle Endeavour isn't too worried about that big gash in the side of it. Their commander, Scott Kelly, tells the Today Show, no, he's not aggravated about it at all.
It's not aggravating at all. This is a very, very complicated program. The vehicle is very complex, and, you know, the way I think one of the things NASA does very, very well is, you know, works through these problems.
And blow things up.
Mm-hmm.
They're only, that's really their two areas of expertise. Hey, by the way, Scotty, this email says, Rick, my friend is a rescue diver for Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. He's told me about divers getting infected hair follicles and bacterial infections from swimming in the Willamette. He said, do we need to develop a Scotty spray? Have fun with that. I do some orifice scrubbing if I were you, Scotty. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for a Britney watch.
Oh, fantastic.
First one in a long time. I think I did it again. Well, I don't know where to start. Sorry, I still don't put all these together because they are vast and numerous.
Now, did we do the thing we were talking about where one of these is not real?
Well, this is from the Star, which I would imagine is real.
I didn't send him a fake one.
Here's the thing, Sarah was telling me before the show some of this insane crap that Brittany is alleged to have been saying and doing and whatever. And I was saying that it just, and there was, you called BS on one of them. You said, oh, that's not real. She didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, that's totally real. And I know that you haven't heard
of
it.
And you and I were arguing over which ones we thought were real and which weren't, because you and I thought opposite ones.
Yeah. And so we were actually going to create a fake behavior of Britney's and see if anybody could spot it. But, it, you know, it's kind of pointless at this juncture. So we'll go ahead and read the story, and we'll tell you which one we didn't think was real. But this was the Britney news. Go ahead, Tim.
Let's see here. First, there's the Star magazine. Has anybody seen that yet?
No, all I know about is what Sarah told me today.
So the headline says, Britney to her kids, you were both mistakes. She makes out with men in front of boys,
fantastic.
Refuses to change their diapers, puts whitening strips on their teeth, and more.
Now, see, Sarah doesn't think the teeth whitening thing is real. That's what she said. That's not real. She would never do that. And, like, my thing is, well, of course she would. She's exactly the kind. I mean, a woman who made her entire fortune by being pretty, but all, and especially,
it just seems so far-fetched.
Yeah, but see, not to me, because A, Britney's whole career was based on her looks and her physical, her aesthetic appearance, and B, as we all know by now, a lot of that was makeup, airbrushing, fake cosmetic, you know, a lot of that was fake anyway, and she is certainly aware of the fact, like we all knew a long time ago, we kind of had bad skin and everything, so of anybody who's going to cling to the whole, you've got to artificially make yourself look as beautiful as possible, it would, of course, be Britney. And that would obviously extend to any imperfections she saw in her children, especially if that rumor, you know, that rumor that went around that she had implants when she was 16, and we never found out if that was true or not, but if it was, I mean, you know, the silicone apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, I would think. And she would already now, can you imagine if Britney Spears had ugly children? I mean, she'd probably be mortified if her children turned out to be ugly.
That's true.
So it seems like that whitening thing is a thing she would absolutely be doing.
I don't know.
From Us Weekly, this is From Us Weekly, the headline is, Brit's Nanny Tells All. It says, drunk with babies, bizarre nudity, demands they share her bed. Says one nanny, at first the drinks would help her loosen up and not be so angry. But she'd inevitably drink too much and be out of it. At one point, the nannies would take care of the kids.
Nanny!
And here's a confirmation from multiple sources saying she'd strip down in front of the staff, nannies, whomever,
yeah.
And she'd ask, do I look sexy?
Oh, that's just disturbing.
Do I look pretty?
Oh.
She's extremely insecure.
And see, you're making it sound even sexier than it is because it's in that idiot hillbilly twang of hers. That sounded dirty.
Did Brit make her nanny sign contracts? Non-disclosure agreements? Who can Britney trust these days?
Do I look sexy?
Anybody?
Ugh, god damn.
Then we have OK Magazine, which trumpets the headline, Britney's new lover is a woman. Yes, she's a woman. The star searches for comfort and attention in the arms of her free female friends. New exclusive photos surfacing of the troubled star searching for comfort and attention in the arms of her former friends include former assistant Shannon Funk. The photo was snapped while the topless two frolicked in a rooftop pool at the Standard Hotel in downtown Los Angeles,
right,
where you stay.
That's where I... Okay, let's stop. A,
Was this going on when you stayed there?
Sadly, no. I think I had to pay extra for that. My wristband didn't get me into that section. What about the college guy she was making out with in the hot tub last week?
That was the same night.
That was the same hotel.
What? This is what, why,
they were
I was
all
not,
running around naked.
I wasn't privy to any of this when I was there. This is exactly the hotel that I stayed in when I went to see Rockstar Supernova taped. It was a cool hotel. I felt a little out of my element. I went back to my room later and had cheese fries from Tommy's because I felt like I wasn't really up to being
that's
up
not
there.
Bad.
No, it was great. I just fell out of my place. Lara's like, let's stay up here and have champagne. I'm like, I'm white trash. I need to go back to my room now.
I feel like I'm missing the rooftop nudity.
Yes. So she's frolicking in a pool topless with some other topless babe.
A former assistant, Shannon Funk.
What does Shannon Funk look like? Anybody know? Mm-hmm. She hot?
She's blonde.
She's
okay.
Blonde.
She's got to be at least moderately attractive.
She's moderately.
It doesn't seem like Britney would have ugly people around her. But probably not prettier than Britney because it seems like she would threaten Britney then. All right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
oh, and this guy, and of course, mailman Chris, because Brit's kids are going to be ugly. Of course, K-Fed is the father. Is he an attractive man? I can't tell. Separate the fact that he's sleazy and talentless. Is he an ugly man, would you say?
Kevin Federline?
Yeah.
He's not my type. I'm not attracted to that, like, smarmy, like, Justin Timberlake. I can see how maybe other people might think he's attractive.
He seems kind of middle of the road. He doesn't seem like he's a very good-looking guy, but he just looks kind of ugly. Yeah.
I don't think that even has anything to do with me knowing anything about him.
It's that Vanilla Ice thing of, like, you know, he has that weird sort of, you know, that kind of weird, smarmy, sort of sleazy vibe around him a little bit. So, all right, interesting. All right, is there anything else?
I don't think he wears deodorant.
No, he doesn't. He looks like he smells. And am I the only one who...
Male Whoopi Goldberg.
I never thought I would hear anybody called a male Whoopi Goldberg, but you're right. He may be it. This is the thing. Whenever I think of Kevin Federline, he's in like a running suit. You know what I mean? Even, and I'm sure that he doesn't always wear a running suit, but in my head, that's what he always looks like.
Mm.
Like one of those, you know, one of those guys from New York, Bensonhurst. You know, one of those like sleazy guys, as Monty Brogan would say, one of those guys who always looks like he's about to audition for a part on The Sopranos. So fantastic. There's your Britney watch for whatever they have for Wednesday.
Before you go, there's something I want you to have.
Whatever happened to her dad? Where is he at these days?
I don't think he's ever been apart.
He's just not around?
Yeah.
Let's see. I've got all of this stuff coming in with Britney Spears. You know, she really does seem, this email nails it, does seem like she is drifting towards real Joan Crawford territory. You know what I mean? If even half of this is true, you know, that right now she's moving like a potted plant on the floor because the house cleaner, you know, left some dirt underneath it or something. Fantastic. All right. Have you more news or is that it?
Well, that's it. We'll have more news later this afternoon, of course.
Well, of course. At 4, 5, 6, and 7.
The news watch never ends.
No, of course. Tim watching like a news hawk over the city, like some sort of bespectacled superhero, gathering the news and then spewing it back forth to the people. Top of the hour all the way through. Like, it's fantastic. Tim Riley, greatest newsman in all the world. Excellent. Thank you. We're not going to get to the second worst story ever today, but it really is worth it to wait. But we really ought to...
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Please, I kiss you on the mouth. Please let me.
He claims he has good news.
Good morning, Metolius.
Ooh.
Is the good news that you brought us another Rod Stewart song, Scotty? Because that would make my day perfect.
The good news is someone's actually looking at my house today.
Oh, so it's good news for you, not for us.
Right. No. I figured everybody would enjoy that. No, actually, I do have some good news.
So let me ask you a couple things. So I don't even know if we have time to talk about this part. Tim will appreciate this. So this is what Scotty came in and said this morning. He's like, Rick, what if Scotty J told you, and he talked about himself in the third person.
Oh, boy.
He came in today, Tim, and he said, what if Scotty J told you he could get you the captain into Neil? I swear to you, that's what he said. Except...
I would sign Scotty to a multi-year contract.
Would you
I
like
agree.
A development deal, Scotty?
I totally
Scotty?
Agree.
Okay, except it's not even that he can get me. This is the thing. It's such a prized opportunity. That when did you want me to do it? 7 o'clock Friday morning?
It is prized, though, Rick. How many people can get you Captain Antoniel?
I met Captain Antoniel.
Yeah, I would say anybody with $5 or some fish sticks or something. Why do I have to interview them at 7 o'clock in the morning?
Who knows?
Are they imposing these strict conditions?
Larry King does things like that.
Here's the deal. I think they're in, like, New York.
Like New York.
I think people are... I used to think all the stars were in California, but I think people are migrating east. Like geese.
Is that their flight pattern?
He's for the winter. Captain and Tennille have flown eastward for the winter.
Muskrat love.
See, you know what you are? We were talking about this
stupid.
Earlier. Okay, overshare. I was, boy, Freudian much? I was going to say, you're like a set of comedy tinker toys. That's the phrase I was looking for earlier, Tim. Where it's like...
It's or like a Cracker Jack
when
box,
you pour
right?
out, no, no. See, again, you're doing it again. It's like when you pour out the Tinker Toys and you look at the box and you see that you can build like a three-story house or like the Empire State Building or a car out of the Tinker Toys, but you just got to know how to assemble them.
I think you're thinking of an Erector set.
Well, that too. Or Lincoln Logs. It's like you have the potential to create comedy because all the raw material's there, but it's like you just can't do it somehow. It's like you've got the material to be funny, but then when you try to put it together... It's not a house, it's just a big pile of bricks on the floor that don't look like anything. That's kind of your comedy sometimes.
It's just raw.
Yes, it's raw. Yes, that's the word. Anyway, so why would I want to talk to the captain and Tennille?
Because love will keep us together, Rick.
I don't know.
I just thought it'd be great to
How
talk
did
to
you
him.
Discover that you had access to the captain and
okay,
Tennille?
Okay, here's reality, okay? I'll just... Enough with the comedy.
Because we're short on time.
I know I'm funny. I discovered this because I'm working on Scott Baio, right?
Uh-huh.
And the publicist firm...
I can't get you, Scott. How do you feel about the captain and Tennille?
No, this is their words directly. Working on Scott, how about I supplement some captain and Tennille for you on Friday? I go, most
at 7 a.m.
I go, most likely we're in. Then they threw the time at me, and I'm like, oh.
So you want me to get up and come here at 7 in the morning to talk to captain and Tennille on the telephone?
You know, we can make a production out of this because...
Scotty, you should just do it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, why don't you interview the captain and Tennille?
And then we can play it on the air.
Scotty, you're never going to get better if you don't try things now
that I am only as good as a backup co-host. I have given up on my full-time
host. Let's not get over ambitious.
You just began your career.
Yeah, seriously.
I've already given up after a year.
Really, honestly, have you just decided that this is your station in life already?
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere
Scotty,
else.
You have to have at least 20 years of experience before you'll say you'll never do this again.
Yeah. And how are you ever going to win one of those
six more months.
Nashua Broadcasting Awards, Scotty, if you don't do something yourself? Seriously, why don't you do the Captain and Tennille interview? That's a great idea.
I'll be there with you.
No, because I'm not doing it.
Okay,
so you'll be there by yourself.
I don't think it matters.
I'll be at home asleep.
We were talking about this at 10 a.m., and I think the time is coming.
Oh, we already had to confirm.
Some other
Captain and Tennille were running out of time.
Radio.
We had to confirm right away.
Yes, Los Angeles probably took
you
it.
You said you had good news for us today.
Yes, I do.
Please tell me that wasn't the good news, that I could get up at 5 o'clock in the morning on Friday to be here to talk to Captain and Tennille.
Well, it was up there.
What is the good news?
Good news is it looks like Peter Criss is going to happen, and people just don't understand this, but I have had to beg and plead and talk about how we're not going to thrash on him.
Well,
apparently, he was just thrashed by another DJ in Seattle yesterday.
Okay, but here's what I don't understand. I mean, first of all, you know that I don't do ambush interviews. You know that.
Correct.
Unless somebody has been a dick to us, like Carrot Top or somebody. But I don't understand what you mean when you say... That he's been trashed by DJs. What does that mean?
Oh, they get on there.
Because
totally...
who hates Peter Criss?
Who even cares that much about Peter Criss? These crack morning hick DJs.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I understand that morning shows are staffed by morons. Don't get me wrong.
And that's
but I guess what I'm saying is, no, but here's my thing. It's not like he's Joey Buttafuoco or somebody that like you could hate, right? Like who
We
even...
love Joey.
Okay, but that's not my point. My point is, he's nobody who's a villain in pop culture. Do you know what I mean? He's not like some Jerry from Survivor type or some Delana type that has been painted as a villain. Sarah, if I asked her right now, Sarah, what do you know about Peter Criss from Kiss?
He wears makeup and he's in Kiss.
That's what I'm saying. Who would even hate Peter Criss?
It's not as important and as neat to her generation as it is to
you. You're missing the point. Peter Criss is not a villain. He's not someone... Like, what do you mean when they say they trashed him?
They totally get on there. They talk about his alcohol problems. They talk about the problems with fighting in the band with Kiss.
Oh,
he's just trying to promote his CD.
I see.
He'll be happy to talk to you.
So, in other words, he doesn't want us to mention, like, anything that's happened to him in his life.
Apparently. And that's why
So he just wants to shamelessly promote his stuff without talking about anything that got him to the place to be able to promote.
In other words, this is like Vanilla Ice, who, we should say, didn't do this. He was very cool.
No, he was very cool.
This would be as though Vanilla Ice had said, don't ask me about Ice Ice Baby.
Or Madonna.
Or The Surreal Life, or the breakdown on MTV, or being, you know, booted off my record label.
Well, see, here's the problem. Normally, you could do your normal Rick Emerson thing.
Well,
what's
he going to do? Hang
fine.
Up on me?
Here's the deal. We need to be careful because we want to make sure that this gal puts us in front of more people.
Who else does she represent?
She represents a whole slew of people. I can't name them right now because I don't know.
Seriously, but I mean, like, if the top of her list, no offense, I'm a
no,
big...
No, no, that's not the top of her
list. Okay, just listen to me now. No offense. I'm a huge Kiss fan. You know that. I love Kiss, love Peter Criss, blah, blah, blah. If Peter Criss is, like, the big A-lister she's got, there's no one underneath him that we need to worry about alienating. That's my point. So I'm not going to be a jerk. You know me. When am I ever a jerk to someone that we're interviewing unless they've done something to ask for it?
I have totally covered you on this
one. So, I mean, he's got to know if he comes on. I'm not going to be like, hey, were you choking on your vomit and sleeping under a bridge? But it's,
that's exactly
that
what she
okay,
said.
But to say that I'm not going to ask him a Kiss question is just a lie.
She said the same bridge comment. That's the funny part.
I will not lie and say that I'm not going to do any Kiss questions. He's got to know that. Okay. That's like when I interviewed Mark Hamill. That would be like, don't ask me about being Luke Skywalker. Well, sorry.
The good news is I think you're in the clear. It will be happening
tomorrow. I mean, I'll let him pimp his thing all he wants, but he's got to know he's going to get some Kiss questions.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be a jerk about
it. She never said no to that.
All right. I'm not trying to be a jerk. So I'm just saying, if you talk to her later, I will let him push his new record all he wants. Guy's got to make a living. I understand that. But you know what? He's got to make a living, and so do we. And no offense, no one is going to tune into a Peter Criss interview because they want to hear about his new record.
But I make sense when I say if we trash on her and him, we're done.
Scotty,
as far as future.
Do you think I will trash Peter Criss?
No, I do not. Okay. I have already covered you. Anyways,
all right.
That's not the best of the best.
Oh,
of the
and
news.
Storm's going to be in tomorrow, too. We haven't
Excellent.
Mentioned that. Tomorrow, Peter Criss and Storm Larks
and
one show. Yeah.
One more little surprise.
Yeah.
You will be talking to Adam Schlesinger at 1 p.m. from
no
Fountains
way!
Away.
No, dude!
And hopefully that high five will not be bad luck, but yeah, it's done.
Dude! Why didn't you say that at the top of the show? I take back all the mean things I've said about you. Well, you become like my Jewish grandmother now. I feel all guilty. Oh, and he walks out. Look at that. He gives me the Adam Schlesinger, and he's like, I'm out, and he leaves the room. In my face, Rick Emerson. Back after this. Sorry, Scotty. Playa. I like how he comes and drops the Fountains of Wayne and like, boom, and then she's out. All right. Tomorrow, Peter Criss from Kiss, Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne, and Storm Large from Storm and the Balls in one day. In your face, everybody who's not us. All right. Thank you to Scotty J for that. We want to thank CNN radio correspondents Ed McCarthy, Lisa Goddard, Mark Shearing, and then our apologies to Jim Roop, who we did not get to today, and to Mr. Skin as well. Rick Emerson show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, it's Tim Riley. Our PA is the mighty Scotty J. Well done.
You want to be depressed? The Nickel Arcade guys are 19.
Damn you, Nickel Arcade Games. That's not important.
Scotty J, you rule.
Dave Zinn is the gatekeeper. Like us next. Don and Mike at 7. We'll see you all tomorrow at 11. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Be safe. Thank you for listening. Watch out for snakes. Bye now.